The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Our next guest has arrived. Hey! Yay. Yeah. We're very happy about this. We need some music, Casey, to bring this on.
Oh, what would you use? What would be an appropriate theme? Is there one that stands out? Appropriate something piece perhaps iconic?
Of music would be maybe something like this?
Yeah.
Of course, she's never heard that before.
Right, please.
But listen, the movie Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is in theaters. I was just, as we were in the break, watching some of the stunt stuff. It's amazing. And the female lead in this is right in our studio. Rebecca Ferguson is here.
Yeah.
Hey, Rebecca, how you doing?
Good, you guys.
Welcome. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So how excited are you, huh?
Overly excited.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. How long ago did you guys finish and wrap and you were done? Has it been over a year? Or
No,
we really
wrapped in, I think we wrapped in March.
And then
we've that's a quick turnaround.
More shoot days after that.
Okay.
I wonder if the, because sometimes, and the thing that distinguishes this series, which I love, I've loved every one of the movies, the physical effects. Not a lot is phoned in, not a lot is CGI'd, and I guess the reason, from completion to being able to release it so soon after, that probably figures into it a bit, right?
Yeah, it does. And the fun thing is being a sort of in environments where you don't have lots of green screens and stuff. You know, the bikes are driving and these wires are set roads. It is.
It's there.
Dangerous. It's there. It's fun. By the way, good having all the names here. I can say, hi, Steve. Hi, Kathy.
That was Preston's idea.
Very good.
Thank you for that. Hey, speaking of the physical effects and so forth, they've got you jumping up and wrapping your legs around people's heads and snapping their necks and doing all this crazy stuff.
Just a regular Friday evening, really,
I guess,
wouldn't
so,
you
right?
say?
Yeah. is this the first type of... Now, you were in Hercules. You were in that movie as well. But stunts like this, have you done these before?
No, this is completely new. And in Hercules, I was like a princess and doing field work.
You had Hercules go do your dirty work.
I had
work.
Hercules do the work, and I would pay him a bit of gold for it.
Honestly, when you're friends with Hercules, it's an obvious choice.
Have you met Dwayne?
Yeah. Well, we interviewed him. Yeah, we've heard.
He's wonderful. But no, this is the first time. And I was playing Queen of England, and then I did a countess, and I did some, which is lovely, horse and sandals and camels called Barbie.
Right.
And then I said to my agents, I'd love to kick some ass. Is there anything coming up?
Yeah.
And they said, mission. And I said, no, we can't get that. And then.
And you got it.
I did.
Well, wow. It was my understanding that you know, they go through a pretty arduous, because you're basically. The female equivalent of Tom Cruise. You are as badass as absolutely. But the second you arrived for everything to get started, they took you to a gym and said 6 days a week.
Upon arrival, they picked me up and then they brought me to the gym.
And that was it.
And a month and a half, I think I did about 5-6 hours a day, 6 days a week of different kinds of training. Like Tom likes running. I don't know if you've seen it.
He runs a lot.
And
he has a particular Tom Cruise run.
It's so good.
I love Tom Cruise in action movies. I think he is just awesome. I mean, because you can tell he's into it and he's into the stunts. Now, as you go in and you're taking something and you know, you be careful what you wish for scenario. I want a little kick-ass action. you know, they have you training with the fighting and the martial arts, and they give you guns to use, obviously.
Amongst lots of other things.
Lots of other stuff. And were you blown away? Was it overwhelming? How did Tom help you?
Oh, God, yeah. Okay. I mean, this is his machinery, and he's been doing this for many years. So it's sort of you come into an already created ensemble of characters and people and energy and knowledge.
It's a machine.
But it's something that is fun and exciting, and you can ask millions of questions, or you just also study him in action, because we were on set every day together, and when I was filming and he wasn't, he would be coming in just to support. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's like coming home to someone and them just inviting you in.
Yeah.
And you have a laugh doing it. I miss it. I do.
Well, your additional experiences of making movies will be as pleasant, because obviously you enjoyed this.
I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Steve said, I really enjoyed every movie thus far and have been impressed at how they top one stunt after another. And the scene on the Burj Dubai in Ghost Protocol is ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I didn't know he did it for real
until
I saw him on the plane in our film. And then I went, okay, the guy does it.
If you're not familiar, he's on the tallest building in Dubai, and he's really on the
tallest building in the world. world,
yeah.
and he's on the outside of it, and I didn't think that that stunt could be topped. And then in this movie, the plane stunt yep. occurs, and we have a video up on our website of how that actually happens, and that's actually him on the outside of the plane.
Okay, yeah.
You know, do you have a favorite stunt from any of the movies? And is that your favorite stunt from this movie?
And mind you, I was sitting there drinking coffee. Just drinking you go, Tom, baby. You go. Yeah.
You are my hero. But your first day of filming, you had to rappel down the Vienna Opera House?
Yeah, I did.
100 feet?
I think that, well, that one was 75.
That was 75.
It doesn't matter because I have vertigo. Basically, I wouldn't be sitting on this chair.
Yeah.
And this is like, I don't know, half a meter.
Right.
And I told them, and they said, that's fine. We have great stunt doubles. And I was like, stunt doubles? Yeah, they're good. I want to try it.
Yeah.
So they put me in a harness. And for a month, they sort of brought me up a meter, 2 meters, down to 1 meter again. And we gradually worked ourselves up to the height.
Can you,
that was 75.
Can you lose? I've heard if you... I mean, in the classic case, they say face your demon and you'll beat it and you lose it. Have you lost your vertigo because of this?
Do you know what, Steve? I'm doing interviews in houses in America on the 45th floor. Usually I'll be having them all in the lobby.
Wow. It was that severe, yeah. that yeah. pronounced. Yeah. Wow.
It's funny because we have had actors in here before that have said when you're up for a role and you'll basically say anything to get it. Like, yeah. you know how to ride horses. Yeah, of course I do. I've ridden horses for years. Never ridden a horse in my entire life. And so even though you have vertigo, you just, you know... Whatever.
Yeah, and also it's a Mission Impossible. I didn't really think what comes with Mission. I've seen all the films. I love them. But you just never know what to expect. Expect the unexpected mm-hmm. as an actress in a Mission film as well.
Well, and
you know that they will always support you. You know, they would never go, just jump off the building.
You're going to die.
You'll get trained you'll have someone else do it. It's more that I'm put in a situation where I get to try things and to face fear and to decide to go no or yes.
There's a thing that they do, the Mission Impossible movies, that it stands for the best Bond movies. You always have to have an engaging, good villain.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had Seymour Hoffman, and they've had Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's the villain? I hear the potential is that you could possibly have your character could have another side to her.
If I told you that.
Okay, I know. I know.
We have a very good team of bad guys in this film.
Okay.
And it's fantastic acting. Just go and see it.
I have a question. Why haven't we seen... I'm, like, in love with you. I'm falling for this woman. You're stunningly beautiful. You have this amazingly gorgeous voice. Why haven't we seen you in more movies up until now? I know you've been working, but why not in higher profile projects?
I think it has to do... It's a hard area of work. Probably, like, in this job as well. I mean, there are many channels until you get to... a place where people will be listening to you
right.
en masse. But I've done quite a lot in Sweden. And then 3 years ago, I managed to cross the borders and I did something called The White Queen.
Which got a great critical reaction.
Incredible
critical
reaction.
This is the one that takes place during the War of the Roses?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So medieval. And then sort of gradually everything takes time. It's like a generator. And we'll see where it goes from this.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really loving it.
Yeah, well, you're going in the right direction, certainly, with this film. Yeah.
Are you a tango dancer?
I am. Have you danced tango, Kathy?
Well, I'm a salsa dancer, but I love all the dance shows.
You teach me moves and I'll teach you.
Yeah. Well, I've taken a few tango classes. It's very difficult. And you have to, I feel like you really have to know your partner because you're going to get super close.
You do. You have to just sort of relax into it. But there's a difference between Argentinian tango and normal sort of Finnish tango. I did the Argentinian one. And
okay.
I taught it on low level. It's incredible.
Did you have a school? Were you teaching?
Well, I started off and I loved it. And then I had a good connection with pupils.
Okay.
And I danced with this incredible guy. So we sort of, our collaboration worked well together.
Let me ask you a question. Was there a point in your life when you had a Swedish accent? You were born in Sweden, but your mother was British?
Yeah, my mum's English.
Okay.
My dad's Swedish.
Okay.
It comes now and then. When I'm back home in my little fishing village in Sweden.
It comes back to you?
Yeah, and I come back and they sort of go, yep, okay, voice coach.
what's your accent in Mission Impossible?
I think I do it like this.
British?
Yeah.
Okay. She's a traveling undercover agent. So people say where she's from. And I sort of go, it depends on where you think the accent is from.
Sure, you pick it up.
Steve has a wonderful Swedish accent.
Here.
Yeah.
I do every stereotypical when it's Scottish. But you got to oversell it to do the deal.
You have a massive ring on the middle finger of your left hand. Is that a scarab?
That is a scarab. I wish you could see it.
Oh.
Yes, this is my baby. But you know what? Traveling airports in America could be seen as a weapon, apparently.
Yes.
I didn't know. So, yeah, so literally my publicist says, check it in. Don't have it on you.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's like one-to-one scale. That's the size of an actual...
It's fab, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's a Norwegian brand. We do very good jewelry in Scandinavia.
Are you into bugs and, you know, different...
Sure, when they're stiff and on my hand.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't De Beers from Scandinavia somewhere? The diamond company? Yeah.
Yeah, I think they are.
All right, so my wife's family is from a diamond empire in that area. And then,
what?
Yeah.
I never heard of this.
Yes.
Your wife is part of a diamond empire?
No,
Tell us.
The guy left the family for love. So he decided to come over to America for
love. Over diamonds?
Love over a million!
What was he thinking?
I have no
exactly.
idea. Yeah, it's pretty interesting, huh?
It's the first I've heard of this.
Is that the end of the story? I was waiting for something else.
And then immediately.
The end of the story, he's sitting in front of a microphone with his name on it now. So.
Wow.
That's what it's come to.
Yeah. Yes, Rebecca.
I'll give you my scarab if you give me a diamond.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, good.
You have officially met Casey now. Is that the end of the story? Are you done speaking now?
No. Yes. De Beers is from Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
In Europe.
Might as well be.
Luxembourg.
Yeah.
What?
Is it Luxembourg?
It is, yeah. Mm. Which is small.
Did you just know that or did you look that up?
No, I knew that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good jumping in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you see me just do the nod and go, oh,
well, you know, I like geography.
Simon Pegg's in the movie as well, and he's a big movie geek.
Yeah.
And
Simon is just a geek.
He's just a geek in general, yeah. And we've had him in the studio, and he seems like a great guy. Is he a lot of full of charismatic energy on a set?
Simon is a dear friend. We are laughing all the time. Basically, when you have Simon on set with Tom, they generate each other. You just step back and you just watch them go. It is hilarious.
Who comes up with the stunts? Is it Tom? Is it somebody that the writers are? You know, how, because he seems so gung-ho about everything, Tom Cruise. I mean, you know, is it the director getting together and say, all right, let's attach you to the side of a plane? Or where does that idea originate?
I think that's a good question for Tom, because I've sometimes wondered where it all came from. But I think they sit down and Tom has ideas and sort of thoughts. I know that there was this underwater sequence that we were doing that Chris and Tom were talking about during Jack Reacher when they were filming that. And because they're really good friends, I think they sit down like we do and they sort of go, hey, what about being on the side of a plane? You know, should we do that? And then they ask me, and I go, F you.
As with any sane person.
No, and I think they play off each other, and then Wade Eastwood, who is the stunt coordinator, who is smashing, will tell them if it's, you know, doable or not, and then it sort of just builds up.
So this doesn't open until the 31st. Have you guys yet had a big glitzy premiere for the movie yet?
No, we have our first premiere in Vienna.
Accordingly,
wonderful.
The 23rd. So I look forward to seeing it.
And will you go to a number of these premieres? Will there be a Hollywood premiere or anything like that?
I think there'll be a couple. I think we're having some in New York and a bit of Asia, Europe.
And what's next for you? Some stuff has to have gotten lined up, I would imagine.
Well,
I just
wrapped a film with Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant.
Ah, yes. Very nice.
Wow. Yes, Preston, I can see by you dropping your drawer. That's been me for a couple of months.
I'm sure.
But we hear that she is incredibly magnanimous and wonderful to work with. And, I mean, you know, she wouldn't have to be with her legend, but that's what we hear. Is that what you're finding out?
None of these people who I'm working with do. I mean, I've had from John Hurt to Tom Cruise and then to Meryl Streep. And I guess when you've worked in the business for so long and you don't have to present something special because you're quite comfortable... She is just so modest and kind and brilliant, and you forget that you're sitting with one of the world's best actresses.
Yeah, if not at this point, but I think just on award level.
You just need to see Meryl, and that's enough.
That's it.
That's when you've made it.
Does she pick up from other... do you find out, you know, as she comes in and she's working with somebody she's never worked with before, like yourself, that she understands, look, I know I might come off as a bit intimidating, and she makes you feel comfortable because of that.
No intimidation at all. I remember my first lunch, and Stephen Frears, who's the director.
Great director.
Wonderful director. So they said, there's a little luncheon going on. Hugh Grant's going to be there and Meryl Streep. And I sort of felt my heart, you know, beating a bit quicker. Yeah. And you walk in, and she came in and just gave me a hug, and we had a bit of salad, and we chatted about... people in general, and you sit there and it sort of hits you now and then. You're sitting with Meryl Streep as it did with Tom Cruise, but It's normality. It's kind people.
That's very cool. And it's
like meeting you guys.
Oh, I'm sure. It has to be.
Is that a bottle of wine?
Yeah.
Yes.
This?
It's empty, though.
Yeah.
That's why you're so nice.
Well, I got this and then
my
I got...
My God, we didn't prepare for this.
I got Captain Morgan if you need a...
There we go.
Plain size. Yeah. Bottle.
We're all basically smashed.
We're loose around here.
Oh, that's fine. That's
but it's a cool experience. But I couldn't help it if I was sitting there having lunch with someone that I adored at that level that you have to always go, oh, my God. Do I have food on in my teeth? Or yeah, the whole thing.
Well, applause to them when you walk out of the room and you've actually forgotten that you're sitting with a superstar.
That's a great
ultimately
time.
It's work though, right? I mean, like, you're doing a job, so yes, it's maybe intimidating initially, but then ultimately you realize you're doing a job, they're doing their job, so you must realize that we're our goals are the same.
Yes, absolutely, and we're there to tell a story. And I think I usually feel that, God, they've done a mistake. What am I doing here?
We feel like that every day.
You sometimes need people to look at you and go, look, they've chosen you. Just relax into it. You're there for a reason.
All right, good. Yeah. Keep it positive.
But I wonder if you or anybody who might be, you know, looking at this gigantic star who you've admired for years and years, like we do when people come in here from time to time, we'll find a way to finagle getting their phone number or something like that.
Mind if I call you sometime?
Have Meryl Streep's number in your phone book, you know, in your cell phone?
Yeah, let's go about FFJ, Franz Foster Jenkins. #1.
Let's go rappelling sometime.
Yeah. Wow. Well, any idea when that will come out?
No, I don't actually. I don't think we have next year. They're showing me.
And what is that? What will that
we're
be
doing
called?
Charades in here next year.
Two words.
And what will that be called? That one with Hugh
it's
Grant?
It's called Florence Foster Jenkins.
Florence Foster Jenkins. That's why it's in
you. Just looked at me and said it that way because I said I was in love with you.
I know, even I'm looking like mesmerized by it.
Oh man, unbelievable. Well, listen, we certainly appreciate you coming by here.
We're excited
for the film, and we hope the biggest and best of things happen to you.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. Oh, good vibe in here.
You talk real good, like.
She is lovely. Let's hear it for Rebecca Ferguson, everybody. Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, that's in theaters. And with that, we'll take ourselves a quick break and come back in just a moment or two. We got more to go, my friends. Stay right there.
Like what you hear? You can see it, too. Check out Preston and Steve's Daily Rush on Xfinity On Demand.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We were talking earlier about this photo of Bill Belichick and his daughter at the very end of the Super Bowl. It's all exciting. There's crowds on the field, and she gives him a congratulatory kiss. Well, of course, there's, you know, people taking pictures nonstop, and there's a moment frozen in time of the two of them lip locked, and both their eyes are closed, and some people pounced all over it that it looked a little too passionate for their feelings.
It's not like he has a handful of knocker, you know. He's got.
I do think it was caught at the wrong moment.
That's his thumb on her armpit, Casey.
He might have.
He's not feeling her up. It's in that second. But the subject did start to drive, as we were talking about it earlier, what's appropriate, what's not, and different signs of affection.
And I didn't realize she was 30. I thought she was younger.
So she has experience, Kathy.
No. But I said when I was at that age, I didn't kiss my dad. And I certainly didn't at 30. I mean, I think it stopped. You know,
Italians kiss each other on the lips like crazy?
Yeah, a lot of people do, and a lot of people in my family do. We don't.
He kissed me on the lips.
Yeah,
that's right.
Your dad did?
Yeah. Nick, you have a smaller mustache than Kathy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you guys have to remember I'm part Irish too, so some of the some of the traditions come from that side, I guess. A lot of my the Italian side of my family, they do kiss on the lips. We do not.
Kathy, all right, so you haven't kissed your dad on the lips in a long time.
Yeah.
He hasn't won any Super Bowls, I assume. You know, so we have
No, he did. He won. Yeah. He got one.
We also have to, you know, put this into context. This guy just won the National Football Championship. You know, there's
I don't think so. If something that exciting happened to my dad, I would certainly go over, give him a hug, give him a high five. We would celebrate, but we would not
kiss. Would you unbutton your blouse?
Yeah.
No, Steve.
I'm just trying to imagine how profound this experience was.
Well, you're breaking my heart, Kat.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. There are families that do it, but I see why. Look, it was taken at the wrong time. I think there's nothing wrong with
this. This is clearly, listen, the thing about kissing on the lips, and you're right, and the Italians will do it. The guys will do it. You know, it's a part of the deal. Goodfellas, for Christ's sake, there's more making out than you can possibly imagine. So, but that said, in this case, obviously caught in the second, but there's, you know, do you ever get creeped out by, well, there's the SNL skit you've seen where the family makes out with each other, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's gross.
Not basically, they make out.
What about you? I mean, with your parents, did your dad kiss you?
When I was a kid, yes. Yeah. And that stopped at some point in my adolescence. But
my dad...
I still
kissed
my mom.
Other dads.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. And that got to be a little bit of an issue.
Wow.
Bruce Jenner.
Yeah. He's never talked about it.
And it's Gene is his name, so now he just spells it with a J.
Yeah, what? I don't remember when it stopped. It just did.
Yeah, I think it's probably like 12 or 13. Yeah. My son's 8 and I dread the day that it stops. I don't want it to end.
It's the kid that will rebuff off. Obviously,
yeah, it'll be a point where it's embarrassing for him in front of his friends
at
or
least
something
put
like
your
that.
Pants.
Right, come on, Dad, we're in public here. I have one child, you know, and he's my son, and it'll stop at some point.
It'll kill you, right?
It'll kill me. It'll break my heart, and he won't want to do it anymore. So now, when I get to kiss him goodnight, that makes my day.
Aww. Giving my daughter a kiss is one of my favorite things of the whole day long, and it's, you know, when she gets home from school or just to say I love you or before bed, and we do that, you know, the eyes closed, big pucker, that type of thing. It's so damn adorable.
That's me with a hooker.
I know, right?
So cute. Because she that's the only way they'll kiss.
Yeah, right.
Right, you gotta pay extra.
Yeah, because they usually save that for their boyfriend.
Yeah, that's right. But I don't think it's odd that a 30-year-old daughter is kissing her dad.
Do you still kiss your mom?
I do, yeah.
On the lips?
On the lips, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My mom died decades ago, and I still kiss her.
You do? Yeah.
That's how much you love her.
No. It's to me, that my dad never kissed me. Maybe when I was a kid, I was unaware. Maybe he
was a nice pause before
yeah,
a kiss.
Yeah, we need that.
There was other stuff. There was fingers. No. But there was... I knew he loved me, but there was not a lot of tactile, hugging and stuff like that. Yeah. And that's Irish, a little bit of Scotch Irish.
Yeah, you know, and we are a very affectionate family, but we just don't kiss on the lips.
Don't love each other.
No, yes, right, exactly.
It's outside. What do you do with your brothers, Kath?
No, we don't kiss on the lips.
On the cheek?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you do the kiss or do you the air kiss with cheeks touching?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay. What about your mom and brothers? Do they make out?
No. No, nobody in our family kisses on the lips.
But you still call them mommy and daddy?
We call them mom and dad. If I were to talk to you about them, I would call them mom and dad. But if I'm talking to my brother, I would refer to them as mommy and daddy, yes.
There are a lot of texts coming in, but this one says, there's a moment when your parents held you in their arms and put you down only to never pick you up again.
Oh, well, that's depressing. Why would you send us that?
Well,
it's true.
True.
I know.
It's
true. God, don't depress me.
I remember. Maybe I was 7 years old. My dad was over the bed and he goes, Dad, he doesn't love you anymore.
No, they don't stop loving you.
Well, listen, and my boys now are teenagers, and because, you pick up your son, you hold him on your side, you walk around, you put him on your shoulders and stuff like that. And like a year or two ago, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. He's doing it to you now.
My oldest says, yeah, I actually piggyback rode up on one of my sons. I mean, we wear the same size shoes.
He's taller than me.
I totally miss it. You know, it's sad.
Could you just cradle him a little bit? Maybe
throwing out my back.
Pick him up at school and cradle him in your arms.
Right,
set him up for a year of ass kicking.
Let me go to some calls here. I'm going to go to Joe. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Hey, guys, it's about to get turnt in this hizzy.
Nicely done. Yeah, what's up, man?
Hey, guys, I have three children. My daughter and I still kiss. She's actually 40. My two boys are 38 and 34. And they still kiss me goodbye and hello every time they see me.
On the lips?
And Joe, does your daughter...
We have kissed on the lip, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you look at this Billie Jack thing, it doesn't stand out as something bizarre to you, correct?
we've done it for 30-some years. But the really cool thing, guys, what really touches me is I could be in a group with their friends, and they still do it. They're not embarrassed to do it in front of their friends. And that's more telling to me than it is than when we're alone, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just, for me,
thanks, Joe.
Maybe 10 years where it's not cool. And then you come back around, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe from, like, 10... You know, like we're 9 to like 19, and then, you know, you become a man. You're like, listen, I love my dad. I want to show my dad that love him, and I don't care what anybody says.
You owe it to your adult children to give them a little foreplay,
right?
You know,
but I didn't.
Do you have a kiss for daddy?
I didn't kiss my dad on the lips as an adult, but you know, we would do cheek kisses, like a big hug and a cheek kiss every time we saw each other and.
How are you giving me a hard time?
No,
for not doing
because
it?
that's man man. Like, but my
man
mom,
on man is fine.
But my
so
mom,
did your sister kiss your dad
yeah,
on the lips?
Yeah, yeah. And I kissed my mom on the lips. Okay. Still, you know.
What about aunts and uncles?
No. Cheek.
Mm-hmm.
What about waiters and waitresses?
Balls.
Yeah.
Balls.
Do you have a kiss for daddy?
There are awkward friends who sometimes expect a kiss when you haven't seen them in a long time, like a kiss on the lips, and that throws
like
me
dad.
Off. Yeah, well, it's Kathy's dad who's the first one that comes to mind. No, I have some friends that, like, have an ex-girlfriend or somebody that I'm still friends with that I haven't seen in a long time, and they come up and they greet you with a kiss on the lips. You never had that happen?
Yeah, I've had it.
And I don't automatically go for the lips when I first see somebody. I'll go for the cheek. But they'll come in for the lips, and you're like, oh, all right, we're doing that.
I think in this age of Ebola and all that stuff, I think maybe you want to. But there, some people are just genuinely affectionate that way, and you don't want to make him feel like an idiot.
Dr. Mike kissed us the other day.
There you go.
He did.
There's one.
Yes, he did.
I will tell you something. With Dr. Mike, and it's the thing.
On the cheek.
I'm trying to emulate him a bit in the
absolutely,
way that
me
he
too.
Because he embraces life and it's genuine.
He spreads the love.
And I know he's not trying to get some off me.
Nope.
You know?
Well.
But he does get some off.
He does.
Maybe that's part of his
game. That's the whole angle,
he's done
man.
Stuff to me my wife hasn't even done.
He's not forcing it. You know, you're just readily giving
it to dropped him. I drop trout. Let's go. Yeah. Let's play hide the worm.
Hey, we've all dropped trout.
Yes.
Dr. Mike.
I'm now aboard.
Nick is now aboard.
I'm on the right mic train.
Let me go to Kathy. Hey, Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Ball sacks are yummy.
Oh, ball sacks.
Don't I know it. Yeah. What's up, Kathy?
So I'm 27 years old, and I think I'm a fairly normal girl. You know, no daddy issues or anything. And I still kiss both my dad and my grandfather on the lips. They always are the ones that go in for it. And there's been times when I think it's weird, you know, boyfriends are around or whatever, but I mean, for the most part, I just think, all right, you know, this is how they want to express their affection towards me. That's fine.
Kathy, what do you do with your mom?
On the cheek, not on
the cheek.
Lips.
Okay,
okay.
Yeah, so, so dad and granddad get the lips, and mom gets the cheek.
That's correct.
Okay. I think it's incredibly sweet that you still do that, Kathy.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Good. So. And would you consider yourself attractive?
Fairly.
Could this lead anywhere?
Shut up.
On good days.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy.
Listen, there's not a lot of people at the retirement home today. Why don't you come on over?
Oh, so that's the way it is. There,
And it's funny because
you
that...
You had a kiss for daddy?
The principal is the one who was in real life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There, he was
Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah. That's it.
Had questionable artwork that could have been considered kiddie porn.
Child porn. Yeah. Let me go to Joe. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Good morning.
What's up, guys? You guys rock.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. What's going on, man?
Well, you know what? Growing up, my father, you know, we come from a strong line of Italians, and my father never showed affection, never, you know, got a kiss from him. You know, when I was younger, I remember, like, going to give him a kiss, and he'd, like, you know, turn his cheek, and he'd give him a kiss, and it was like, all right, that's enough. You know, I'll see you later.
So you would actually get the like a real physical brush off.
Yeah, almost. You know, all right, go to school now. You know what I mean? It was very, very stern kind of, you know, demeanor. Well, you know, it wasn't until about 4 years ago that I wound up in the hospital, you know, in a coma on life support from the flu. And that he completely turned around, started to tell me, like, I love you. He would give me a kiss, you know, and realized, like, you know, I mean, that I guess he almost lost me, that he completely came around. Now, don't get me wrong. There was never any kind of, thought that he didn't love me, because my father showed me, his love in different ways. You know sure. what I mean? Bought me everything, yeah. talked about, he was a great dad.
Yes.
But, just the way he showed his emotion.
He made those Super 8 films of you? Which was
exactly.
No,
exactly.
I agree. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, but Joe, you knew you were loved.
There's still a part of you that kind of wishes you guys had that.
A little bit. Because now with my kids, I am the complete opposite. Like, I'm constantly showing my kids affection. I'm trying to teach my son, don't ever feel embarrassed. Your parents, always give your mother a kiss before you leave.
Yeah.
Tell her you love her. Tell me you love her. And that's the relationship that I have with my kids. And they are so overly affectionate with me and my wife. It's a real good feeling, I got to say.
Preston, in your relationship, are you the first, if you come home to initiate a kiss with your wife, I didn't have that experience growing up, so I think I'm the first to come in and show affection to mm-hmm. Claire when I, and she's wonderful and reciprocate and all that stuff, but I think I'm the first to go tactile and kiss or hug or grab from
her. I'm not really sure. I mean, it's pretty mutual, but I try to make sure that I definitely show those signs of affection. It goes a long way. It really does.
Sometimes there's another guy in the way.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I have to wait and turn.
I definitely do, because my wife doesn't really stop what she's doing. It's not like, when I came home and the kids, they don't even do it anymore.
Let me wipe first.
They used to, come and greet me at the door. Aww. Now the dog greets me at the door. But if my wife is sitting down, she doesn't get up. If she's, doing something in the kitchen, she doesn't, so I have to go to her anyway. So, I always initiate.
Hang on. I'm going to go to this call, and then I have a kind of a heavy text message I want to read. But let me go to Tammy here. Hi, Tammy. Good morning.
Hey, bitches.
Hey, what? What's up, Tammy?
Hi. So my mother-in-law, God love her, she's a great woman. She's got some health issues, and one of them is gingivitis. So when she comes in for the full-on mouth kiss, and I'm like, dear God, God love her, but it smells like death. And I have to turn my head. I did a head turn, so she has to get my cheek every time, and it's kind of so awkward.
Hey, do what Kathy would do. Just puke right in her mouth.
Yeah.
And that'll stop.
No,
fill her mouth up with chunky soup.
She's so sweet, but it's like every time we're expecting her this weekend, and I'm going to say, I'm going to have to do the awkward head turn again.
Tammy, be very sweet about it and say, were you licking someone's ass?
No.
You know what? But there, well, good luck with that. But there are some people that I do have to make a mental note of, friends that I only see on occasion. And when you're doing the greeting, does this person like the kiss or not?
Right.
You have to remember.
And I have to remember, she doesn't. So I'll go in for the pretend cheek kiss or just a hug. This one really likes to make lip contact. Mm-hmm. And I got to remember that, because otherwise I look like the jerk that's brushing it off,
Well, yes. Not lip contact, but kiss or hug or handshake happens to me a lot with guests, especially male guests that come into our show that have been here a number of times. It's like,
yes.
Are we at the point? And I think, was it Dom Irera? Maybe he was like, we're not at that point yet. He was like, don't give me a hug. There was a comedian in before him, and I had hugged that comedian, and then he said to me, he's like, we're not there yet.
I'll see when they come over to you, because the guy's just going to do the handshake, I think I do. I want people to know that handshake means something. Because you're a woman, you have to play that game.
And usually I'll do it. It's usually when they get here, and if it's like a little awkward, we didn't do the hug, we did the handshake or hi or kiss or whatever. Then afterwards, I know what's expected, and I'll just go over and, give a hug or a kiss.
Hey, Bradley Cooper does the bro hug.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
When he's
and
coming here,
awesome.
Every time it's the...
You love getting hugged by Bradley
it's the,
Cooper.
It's the not the straight handshake, but the, what do you call this? The almost high five?
The bro shake, and then he pulls you in for the hug.
Right, and then you make out with him for a little while.
God, I would have that man in many ways.
I got a couple of bro hugs from Giroux the other day.
Giroux's a bro hugger.
He's a bro hugger.
Yeah, totally, man.
It's a nice gesture. There's nothing wrong with that. The thing that is weird now is that you'll have, I don't know if a woman is coming in for a hug, I try to do the neutral side hug with the one arm, and then if they go for the two arm thing, it looks like I'm standoffish. So I don't know, You know, should I just go for a full hug every time? It's that game you play because you don't want to make someone feel awkward.
Well, I always have a problem with greeting somebody that I work with outside of a work environment.
But yeah, but you make it fun, well, awkward.
For you, you know, because we do the thing and I'm like, okay, should we, hey.
Like he pretends to hug, maybe. Yeah. Are we going to hug? Are we going to kiss? What are we going to do?
But if it's somebody else, like Tagey or Paula or anybody from our sales office, and I see them outside, I'm like, oh, well, I don't hug you hello ever, Casey, and I see you every single day.
When we got the award at that luncheon in the fall, we were up on the stage, and Marissa gave you a hug, and you go, okay, I guess we're hugging. And we'd been working together all day, and we had just gotten to lunch, but it was like a nice celebratory moment.
Right.
And she was feeling the moment and gave you a hug, and you're like, well, all right.
Here's a perfect example. Our neighbors next door, and their front door is about 20 feet from our front door.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hey, how are you? We never do that. But when they come over with other friends.
Oh, all right.
I go to Leslie, who's the my neighbor. Do we hug, I guess? Because
yes.
I don't want to be like, no, you're not huggable. The other women are, though, but you're not.
Right.
I don't know if that's an insult or what the story is. But, it's
it says, I'll be there Friday morning, and I expect hugs and kisses from all of you.
All right.
By the way, here's another one. Okay, it's a little bit weird, but it says, so I have a problem with this. My in-laws kiss my kids on the lips, and it pisses me off. We have asked them to stop, even took them to a therapist to get them to understand I don't want them to do that.
Oh,
and
geez.
Here's the deal. I thought that was a bit much, but they go on to say, because I was molested by my grandfather.
Oh.
And they still do it. So, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the in-laws are being very innocent about it.
Right, but it bothers her.
But if this is bothering this person, you need to, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Well,
you need to honor their wishes and not
do it. It's the parent.
Yeah.
You got to honor the parents' wishes.
Yeah. Wow, I'd never
always
heard anything
honor the
like
parents'
that.
Wishes.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I also wanted to bring up this point because I don't smoke anymore, by the way. It's been about a month.
You can say that now.
I can say that now, yeah.
For you.
But when greeting people, like especially females, when you have to go in for a hug or a kiss, when I was smoking, I always hated that because I knew how I smelled, and I'm like, oh, man.
And now you don't have that concern.
I don't have that concern.
Good
anymore.
For you.
It's pretty awesome.
If they're wearing jeans, is it okay to reach around and slide your hands down between the jeans and the skin?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as you don't go into the underwear.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
You're okay.
Kathy
yeah.
loves it.
Place
what?
Your middle finger in between the butt cheeks.
By the way, I've seen Casey do this to Kathy before. They'll go in for a hug, just a pretend hug, and Casey will start to undo her bra string.
I don't do. What are you talking about?
Let your bra.
I'm pretty sure my wife's not listening.
Well, I don't actually let you do it.
That's when she freaks out and smacks you. So
yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
All right, well, anyway, I think it's sweet that Belichick's daughter kissed him after they won the Super Bowl. I think it's creepy. At
they
all.
Got a hotel room.
Yeah, they did not.
All right, carry this on.
We're gonna take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Dirty Honey.
You know the time has come.
Shine down.
My monsters are real. And that train had a key.
Ghost.
Because it's mine.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Casey just saw this. Here's breaking news.
Yeah.
This is in Bluebell.
Yeah.
Off Forest Road. A school bus crashed into a house. I mean, like into the living room.
Holy crap!
Look at that. Here's a picture of it from Fox.
Was it on with students on board or was it?
Scroll up here, Nick. The accident happened around 7:45 a.m. So far, there are no injuries reported. Witnesses say there were some children on the bus. Whoa!
That's a nice house.
Damn.
It looks like it went right into the living room.
Like half of the bus is inside the house.
Yeah.
I get a little bit nervous, and it's no offense to bus drivers out there, but some of these guys they're retired, right? So
yeah.
They're a little bit older. It was my kid's school. They were on a field trip, and the bus driver fell asleep.
Whoa.
Just fell asleep. Yeah, that happened this year.
There was an accident a little while ago with someone, with a bus driver falling asleep at the wheel.
Luckily, there wasn't an accident because there was a parent sitting in the front seat, noticed that he had fallen asleep, that the bus was then swerving into whatever it was.
I don't think
it was oncoming traffic, and so the parent jumped across and righted the ship, and then the guy woke up, but...
Oh, this! Yeah.
I don't want to speculate as to what happened here, but I mean, this bus went clear across a a lawn and into a house. So something had to have happened with the bus driver.
Well, it looks as if, and I don't think this is the case, that the bus driver intentionally drove into this house. There's no... You would have to cut the wheel all the way to the left.
Listen, you never know. An accelerator could have gotten stuck or something like that. And then at that point, you gotta do something pretty quick.
Is this a case of homeschooling, do you think?
Steve. Extreme homeschooling.
This just happened.
No injuries reported.
All right.
So
I just have to speculate as a journalist.
Wow.
Journalist?
Hang on a second.
Is that what we are?
Go with it.
Hang on.
The next 10 minutes.
Brian's kids go to the school where this is from. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So what school is this?
It's St. Helena's in Bluebell.
Okay. And what's the word that you've heard?
I just got an email that goes out to all the parents. It just said no kids were really hurt on the bus. All the kids are fine.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
It didn't give you much more details except that it was a bus accident from Wissahickon School District bus.
Brian, do they know if anybody was in the house at the time?
They didn't say.
7:45 in the morning is a good chance somebody might have been there.
You would figure, yeah.
Hopefully they were out for school already.
I wonder what the cutoff age is, bringing up your point, Casey, for how old. Because there are, I remember even when I was going to school, there were a lot of retirees who were the bus drivers. What is the cutoff age?
I would imagine as long as you're an able driver.
If you still have a license, you can drive a bus.
Yeah, and pass a test of some sort.
Man, our bus driver growing up was the meanest lady on the planet. She hated kids. She just would yell at us incessantly.
Well, then she went into the right line
of work.
I know.
I want to
hate kids, and I want to be surrounded by them.
This was middle school, too, Steve. So it was, for me, middle school was 7, 8, 9 grades. And so obviously you were required to take the bus every day. When you get to high school, you sort of have some options. But and it was to and from, and she just was a mean
That's
bitch.
Fun. We had Wayne was our bus driver in high school.
Was he cool?
He was awesome.
Did he smoke pot?
No.
Okay.
No, did I or did he?
No, did he?
I don't know.
Like Otto, you know?
No, like that guy. Yeah. No, he was a little bit older. You know who yelled at all the time were other drivers. He would he'd be hanging out the window like, yeah, because you're supposed to stop. And this was before the stop sign would come out on the arm.
Right.
It was just when the lights were blinking, you were supposed to stop and cars wouldn't stop. And he'd, hang out the window and yell at him.
God damn you bastards.
Yeah, bus drivers, man. I remember having some angry bus drivers. There's no way.
I always had good ones.
No way I could ever do that job. Oh, like strangle kids.
You'd be going nuts.
Oh, man.
I had a bus driver who would actually periodically, he'd probably be sued out the yin yang these days, but he used to bring treats and would buy ice cream pops and stuff to hand out. And, I mean, just really,
nice.
Really nice. And all we had to do was have sex
with
them.
Stop it. Dude. It's not funny.
Dude.
It's not funny.
But those pops were so good.
We had a guy that we would always talk into. There was one small little hill, and if you went over the right way,
it would
cause the back end to bounce up. And we, whatever his name was, I don't remember. Joe, dude, go over the bump, man. Go over the bump. And if the bus was mostly empty, which it usually was at the time, everybody would move to the back, and it would shoot you up off your seat.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why we sat in the back of the bus.
So you could bounce around?
Yeah.
Vibrations on my tingly parts.
No, God. You just turned everything dirty.
I think I'm becoming a woman.
Sometimes I don't like you.
When we would make turns going into our school, this is in grade school, we all tried to get onto one side of the bus to make it tip over.
Oh, that was a good idea.
We're smart.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
We actually had to. I remember when it was over that same hill, that short little hill that you would pop up at the top. When it snowed one time, he couldn't get the bus up that hill because the back tires weren't getting traction.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
So we're sitting on it, and the tires are spinning. And he's like, everybody in the back of the bus! So everybody moved to the back, and it weighted it down, and we were able to...
Well, that's very cool.
It worked. It got the bus moving.
You figure a bus would have enough gears to get up a hill like that.
No, it was slipping because of the snow. Let me go to Joe. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. I'm a bus driver. I'm not going to say it for who, but there is no age cutoff. You have to get a physical every year. If you pass your physical, you're breathing, you got a good pulse, your blood pressure's right, all that. You can drive a bus. I know drivers that are as old as at least 89 driving still.
Okay. So, Joe, do you think it's an issue, or is it...
I personally think when you see some of these drivers walking across the parking lot, they look like the Walking Dead, and you almost think, like, how should they be driving?
So. Yeah, no, I get that, but, you know, like, my dad's 86, he could drive a bus no problem, you know, yeah. I mean, he's in complete control of his faculties and in good shape, so I guess it is on a case-per-case basis.
It is, more or less, but I think a lot of these people, a lot of these companies, you know, the private companies and districts, is when a warm pole, you know, somebody with a pulse and a warm body behind the seat is
Right. They should be a little sharper than just a blob of warm flesh.
Absolutely. There's a lot of accidents, a lot of people who shouldn't be behind the wheel of a bus driving kids. I mean, it's the most precious cargo there is, really.
Absolutely.
Joe, what kind of money do you make as a bus driver?
I do pretty well. So I used to be a truck driver. I do it now because the money's pretty good. The retirement's pretty good. The benefits are good. That's not the only reason I really do it. I prefer to drive a truck, but, you know, it's good money.
Hey, are there times when it's fun, Joe, when the kids are having a good time?
I love my kids, man. I get along with my kids great, man. My kids like me. I got a great rapport with them, yeah.
That's cool. It makes a difference. Yeah, I always had good bus drivers, and it was always a pleasant thing. And also, they were... In a way, they work as little mini bouncers, too. They keep the peace on the bus, you know, which is...
That depends on where you are. I used to drive from Philadelphia, and there's no peace on those buses.
I could imagine.
No, I remember when my kids started going to grade school, and the bus driver, they had a really nice bus driver. She would say goodbye to him every day. All right, guys, bye-bye. Take care. See you later. I was like, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. That's cool. You're doing that every day to a whole bunch of kids. I hate these little bastards.
Our bus driver's
the Elliot kids.
Our bus driver was Butch. Yeah. That was his name.
Oh, I just thought you meant like a manly woman.
He didn't smile. He didn't say hi. He wasn't mean.
I made him extra sloppy for you.
Would he acknowledge you?
No, I mean, he wasn't mean or anything. No, he would just sit there and you'd get on the bus and then he'd drop you back off.
Just quiet. Oh, okay.
But at a certain point, weren't you in your teacher's car? At that?
Stop.
I'll pick you up at 8, baby.
Baby.
It's kind of funny.
Wear a schoolgirl outfit. Oh, you are a schoolgirl.
I'm in my outfit.
I know. Daddy likey.
Ew, that's disgusting. You're a disgusting man.
Let me go to Karen. Hey, Karen, how you doing?
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I love you guys.
Thank you.
I just want to let you know, I went to school in Roxborough. I went to Saul Agricultural High School, so it was a farm school.
Yeah.
But I lived in Northeast Philly, and we had to get a chartered SEPTA bus at Bridge and Pratt Terminal. We would all get on this bus, and we had the same bus driver every day. He could only pick up students who went to the farm school. We played Led Zeppelin on a radio, the old boombox, up at the front of the bus by the microphone, and he would let us play it throughout the bus. He let us celebrate Freshman Day on the bus, where we hung from our agricultural boots by our strings, by the rails where you would hold. We never had to sit down on the bus. We had grain alcohol with cherries dipped in it on near Christmas, which he shared it. As we drove on this bus every day for 4 years to Saul Agricultural High School.
And didn't he sell some of you guys to Japanese businessmen? God.
Oh, it was just such an awe. His name was Buck, and I'm telling you, if you made it to the back of the bus, you made it. It was awesome.
This was a SEPTA bus?
This was a SEPTA bus that was chartered by our school.
In our neighborhood, for the high school students all take the regular SEPTA buses. They don't take
Karen,
school buses.
How old are you?
I am 48 now.
Okay, all right. I was going to say the grain alcohol thing. I had to go. I'm like, let's back it up a couple steps here. Because
1985.
Okay, it was a different time.
It was more acceptable. Yes. It was sort of expected that your bus driver would provide you with grain alcohol.
All right.
We provided him with it, actually.
Oh, okay. Right. And then I'll reciprocate with some heroin.
All right.
Exactly. But it was a great time, and I just want to tell you guys, I love your show. And
thank you.
Every day. Thank you,
Karen. We appreciate it.
Calling from rehab right now.
I had, my buddy Ben got chased down the street by our bus driver one time. It was on the last day of school, and he steps off the bus and he lights a pack of firecrackers and tried to throw it into the bus. They didn't make it into the bus, but dude ran after him and grabbed his ass and by the shirt collar dragged him back to the bus. I don't remember him putting him back on the bus or him getting in any real trouble, but I think he threatened him pretty good.
Well, as we've heard a few of the people say, if you've got a bad route and you have, you know, kids that are trouble, it could be nightmarish press. Mm-hmm. I could see you just because you're with them for a half hour, maybe 45 minutes. I don't know how long the average bus trip takes in the morning, so I'm sure.
I know the kids on the buses that I would be on occasionally felt a little more emboldened by the fact that there was just a short amount of time of exposure and they could get away with murder.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man. I learned so many things on the bus.
Oh, there's a lot of the sex chat that was informative took place not on the school playground, on the bus.
I clearly remembering what the word screw meant.
Yeah. Or suck.
On the bus.
I remember
school bus. And don't say who's
the bus driver. No. Now, Nick, a little tighter.
No, but you know who? Stop it. You know who got it? Was Underwater City guy.
Underwater City? Oh, yeah. My God.
And he got it from this really hot Asian girl.
Well,
and
can you believe him, though, from a guy who lives in an underwater city where hot dogs are forbidden?
Because we were all gathered around the back seat. Yeah, it was pretty evident as to what was happening.
To not touch another man's girlfriend. On the bus, that was an interesting lesson.
Was
that
this a school bus?
It was on a school bus.
What grade?
Oh, freshman year. You know what? We were fine. We were just experimenting, you know? Yeah.
But it was his girlfriend.
I didn't know. I didn't know that she belonged to somebody else until
You're touching my woman?
He was a public school guy who showed up at my house about an hour after I got home.
Oh, and
I was
really? Like, okay, so he wasn't on the bus.
No.
Went by the name of Fonzie.
And she didn't tell on me either. Her friend did. Her friend was like, oh, you know, Casey was doing I'm like, oh, okay. And so it's so funny.
You think
funny.
You're so cool because you're on the dive team.
I was in the jumpers club, too.
Yeah. Did you touch her inappropriately? Like grab her hiney or something like that?
Something along those lines.
Was it at her at her request?
Front hiney. On the bus? Ew.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
it wasn't unwanted.
You weren't molesting her.
I wasn't molesting her.
Right, right.
No.
It was you were exploring. It was young.
Learning about each other.
Yeah, Air Supply was on the radio.
But I was terrified because guy shows up to my door with his brother. And
I remember you telling this story.
And he pulled.
And he was a badass, right?
He was a badass. Yeah. Dude, I was like, brother. Oh my God. And his brother was like his mutt, because this guy was older than me, right? So he probably shouldn't have been beating me up. So he got his brother there to like intimidate me and gave me like one of those, like, you know, slap me on the side of the face, like, hey, buddy. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my God, I'm going to get beaten up.
But it was
a mob hit, Steve. They took me out of my house, brought me around the corner.
A mob hit.
Yeah.
It wasn't your fault, though, right? I mean, did you know this girl had a boyfriend?
Did you kind of deserve it?
Oh, man. You know, this is 1989.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. It was the year that Taylor Swift was born.
Yeah.
Go ahead, let it out.
I want to say that maybe I knew that.
She was dating Fonzie?
She was dating.
Was she an O'Hara girl?
She was an O'Hara girl.
And her boyfriend was a public school guy.
Yeah.
I think that's on her.
Yeah, right?
Well, but it's never going to be the case.
But they're
going to target the guy who was macking on the girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And so you're just lucky you got away with a little face tap.
Oh, my God. Because I could have gotten my ass. I mean, I could have gotten killed.
All right, I'm sorry.
There's a text
that I can't even read. About finger and whatnot. All right, hang on. Let me go to I have Justin. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Hey, Gary Lauer here. How are you?
Oh, Gary Lauer. He's doing a Gary Lauer.
Very good.
Not too bad.
What's up, Justin?
Hey, guys. So back in the mid-90s when I was in grade school, we had a substitute bus driver who took over a route for us. And one day we were on our way back, and kids would just give this guy a really, really bad, hard time. And he pulled the bus over on the side of the road and was like, I'm not moving this until you guys all behave. Well, everybody thought it was funny, so we kept going and going. We sat on the side of the road for 4 hours, and a police officer finally came. Here this guy had lost his job and was trying to find work doing things and just had a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
Flipped out.
So, obviously, I assume there were frightened parents involved.
Oh, yeah. No, my mom wanted to kill him. There was, like, a big thing at the school board and everything. It was a pretty intense situation in my town.
Are you texting with the Three Stooges?
What was that?
So one of our listeners. Were you supposed to give your phones to basket when you
All right, anyhow, back to the subject at hand. I had I saw a story not that long ago where a woman, bus driver with kids on the bus, quit in the middle of her route.
Just walked off the bus.
She didn't walk off the bus. Okay. She stopped. She called the bus company, whoever she worked for, and said, send a replacement driver. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Wow.
I'm finished. So she followed the proper protocol, but she quit in the middle of her route.
Well, think of the guff that a substitute teacher takes.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, like a substitute bus driver.
Oh, yeah. Forget
it's just
it.
Merciless.
Right?
Hang on a second. Let me go to Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey.
Hey, what's up,
Sorry
Brian?
To bother you guys at work.
It's okay. What do you want to tell us?
Well, my mother-in-law is a bus driver, and their company recently switched, the school switched companies for the drivers, and they hired all the existing drivers, but they now require for the annual physical, they require them to drag an 80-pound bag from the front of the bus to the back of the bus to prove that they're physically sitting up.
If they need to get a kid from the back I assume that's what they're going after.
Okay, so I thought in case they needed to get bags of grain off the bus.
Oh, right? Maybe I'm completely missing the mark on this. Yeah.
We would always ride to school with bags of wheat.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, I could see that.
Make sense.
Let me go next to Mark. Hi, Mark, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Okay, good story. Rode a SEPTA school bus, the SEPTA bus for the school, filled with Catholic school kids, went to Catholic high school, Philly suburbs, and me and my friend smoked pot with the SEPTA driver while we were driving.
On the way to school?
On the way after school.
Okay. Well,
you're on your way home. He was probably getting ready to be done work, too.
Man, what am I smoking? Oh, yeah. Pot.
So this is the mid-80s, and he would keep the hemostats on his sun visor.
What are hemostats?
Roach clip.
Roach clip from the doctor's office.
Yeah, yeah.
To hold the joint.
Oh, my God.
And no one picked up on that?
No, they seen it. Everybody knew it was going on, but nobody said anything. It was mid-80s.
Yeah, things were much more lax.
If you're a school bus driver, do you drive...
Thanks, Mark.
You drive both shifts, the morning and the pickup, I assume, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
So what do you do in the interim?
It's like working a split shift, you know? Yeah. I'm not sure. Maybe there are some that do. Well, here's part of what goes on, Steve. There's obviously there's going to be a break in the middle, but I think we have the same bus driver as elementary school and middle school. So those are different times. The school doesn't start at the same time.
But there's got to be.
It doesn't end at the same
time.
Like
a middle of the day, four-hour chunk where there's nothing going on.
Probably only for some of them, because you figure some schools still have half-day kindergarten, so that they then have to go back to those elementary schools probably after they're done dropping the kids off.
But there's got to be a couple hours of break.
Yeah, there's
got to
be somewhere.
I think that would be, it'd be boring, you know?
Possibly.
Yeah, and split shift is tough, too.
It's horrible.
In and of itself. I had to take the sports bus home when I was in middle school, and there were only three buses that ran from school, so they would go all over the school district, and I was literally the last to be dropped off at the sports bus. So
why? Could you play field hockey?
Yeah, I didn't play. So
the other
much
girls
as coach.
Have left, Nick.
Yeah, they needed a mascot.
You're a manly looking young lady.
No, I played soccer, so it was an hour and 15 minutes every night getting home. And
I hated the sports bus. It was so late.
Sucked so bad.
I didn't have the sports bus, but we did have is our school district was so large that I had the same situation. It was about an hour and 15 minutes before I'd get on the bus by the time I was dropped off at home because I was at the outer edge of the district.
And you run out of people to talk to because they're getting off as you go, and like you take a nap, and that passes a half hour.
Do you ever miss your stop
sure.
on the way home?
Yeah.
And then you're stuck?
Actually, no, I was fortunate because it would loop around and then come back past our house. So happened a few times, and I was able to, they looped around.
No, I remember one time I stayed on too long, or maybe I got on the wrong bus. I think I had gotten on the wrong bus one time. And I'm telling the guy, I'm like, I don't live here. I don't, and they're going, ma'am, well, I got to do this other thing. You know, I don't know if I have to, we're going to take it back to the school. No, but eventually I talked the guy into going and dropping me off in the front of my neighborhood. But that was pretty scary.
Was this in your running away days?
No. That was a little bit later on. I did one time, and this was kindergarten, and we did not live within walking distance of the school, but I decided I would walk home from school one day.
Unbeknownst.
And I just left with the walkers, and I wanted to go because the walkers got out early.
Yes, they were the first dismissed.
They called the walkers first. And so I'm like, I'm walking home today.
I'm going home.
I'm walking. These guys got a great deal. They get out early. Well, it took me like an hour to walk home.
I can't believe you found
my parents are livid. Freaking out because they, the bus comes and Preston's not on it. I eventually did make it to the house, but it was just another one of those. I was like that.
Did you get your ass kicked?
I was a wanderer, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably did. I don't remember that particular ass kicking, but I'm sure I did. I was a stupid kid, man. Well, anyhow, well, it's good to
that
know.
Wasn't the one where he ended up getting run over by the guy in the motorcycle?
No, that was before I was in kindergarten, I think.
What's your name, little fella?
Yeah. I hitchhiked a ride on a freaking motorcycle, yeah, man. Yeah. All right, anyhow. What is this, Casey?
This is the automated message to the parents of the school.
Oh, St. Helena? Mm-hmm. Okay, because there was a bus crash, crashed into a house in Bluebell, and there are no injuries, from what I understand, reported, but this was the message that was sent out.
St. Helena School is sending you an important message.
We have just been notified by Whitpain Police that Wissahickon Bus 161 was involved in an accident. There were 12 students on the bus. All are fine. We will send out an update as soon as we get more information. To THANKUSR. Cat.
What?
Sorry, we have to move on.
Yeah, I don't like the robot voice.
No. Update. No.
Yeah, I don't like the robot voice. I think if you're talking about a bus crash, you should have a human being.
12 humans were injured.
Right. But apparently, nobody was injured.
No, no one was injured.
Apparently.
Everyone's good.
That's the case.
And it didn't, I mean, though it's into the house a bit, it doesn't look like it was going 80 miles an hour.
No, but it was like a third of it is inside the house.
I'm looking at the street. I don't know how they could have.
Yeah, I don't know how they ended up.
Yeah, there's no tracks across the lawn, are there?
No.
I'm interested in.
It was a hover bus.
Maybe it backed through the other part of the house.
I'm interested in finding out what happened.
It came in the other way.
Okay. All right, we got to take a break. We will be back in just a moment, all right?
The Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Wait, turn up the sound.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Our next guests in the studio, set up and ready to perform, ladies and gentlemen. They have their ninth album out.
Wow.
It is called See What You Started by Continuing. Please. Collective Soul, Ed Roland and Jesse Triplett to our studio. Yeah. And welcome back to Philly, man.
Thanks for having us, bro.
Yeah, anytime. Absolutely. We're glad to do it. And, you know, I played the song This, and like the second that we first had it on air on MMR, I'm like, there they go again. There goes Ed writing another hooky tune again, grabbing me right off the bat. You know, I mean, how much I have to wonder, because songwriters, you know, writing a song that's going to catch and it's going to resonate with an audience, one that you're going to sing along with, it's going to be stuck in your head. It's an art to it. It's a science to it. It doesn't just happen. So I'm wondering, how many songs do you have laying around that never see the light of the day, because you just have to, before you find that one that's like, that's the one that's going to do it, you know?
Let me get my iPhone out real quick.
Yeah, take a look.
I don't know. It's just what I do. Wake up and write. I'm not a guitar player. I'm horrible. I just like writing songs. That's just part of daily routine. And I'm not disciplined at all. I don't wake up, have a cup of coffee, kiss the wife, off to work, and write songs. I can't do that. It just happens when it happens.
Everybody seems to have their own formula, right?
Or, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And Jesse lives in Nashville, and I went to Nashville a couple of times to try to write, and they do that. They get up, have coffee, breakfast, and if you don't have it done in 2 hours, they forget about it, which is, it's an art form in itself that way, but I am just not that dude.
Yeah.
You know, I forget who we were talking to, Preston, but talking about, you know, it seems so simple. It is such a difficulty, that hook, you know, the great songwriters, you know, people who are dismissive of something. I almost, if something's catchy, they get dismissive of it. It's like, you know, but that to me is, that's lightning in a bottle, you know. And do you, when you get it, do you know right away, this is it, I got it?
Sometimes the only song like this, the guys love the riff, and I didn't really know where I was going, so we record it, and then I kind of go work hard to get the melody. The only song I've ever had problem with the band was December. They told me that was the most boring piece of crap they'd ever heard.
And wow.
Like, nah, I'm going to fight you on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a huge hit.
Yeah, it kind of worked out in my favor.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Are you reticent to fight like that, or is that a common...
My,
you know,
brother's
obviously
in the band. Of course I am. everybody wants the best. They push me, you know, and they've become songwriters, also really good songwriters. But early on, it was my responsibility to write, and it kind of came what Collective Soul is known for, the way I write. And but they have no problem telling me I suck.
Okay. But that's you know, it's all a collaborative means to an
correct
end.
Correct. And once again, and Jesse knows this, when I get a song, first person I go to is my brother, because I know he will be the one that goes, nope.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he'll go, man, that's cool. Let's go.
You went to the Berklee School of Music, and I always have this impression of that as like, like the, as depicted in Fame, with everyone walking around with their instruments and very artsy. I'm sure it's much different than that. What is that place like? Because that has yielded some of the finest musicians in the world.
It has. I went in the early 80s, so it was a bunch of long-haired hippie dudes.
Okay.
Just shredding. And yeah. I wasn't one of those guys, and I just wanted to be a songwriter. And I ran into a mailman one day. This is a true story. And just being a southern boy from a small town, anybody that said, hey, I'd go, hey, and started talking. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm in Berkeley. He goes, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be a songwriter. And he goes, you think they can teach you that? I'm like, I don't know. He goes, no, go out and live. Go travel. Go do stuff. Figure it out. So I quit Berkeley.
You know,
nah. Went to the mailman.
And it worked.
What was Cheers, Cliff? Oh, my songwriting skills to Cliff Cleveland.
Now, that makes sense, man, because a place like that is filled with amazing technical players. I mean,
correct.
People just,
I mean, it's
virtuosos.
It's unbelievable.
Prodigies, you know, right. and
Steely Dan, the guys
how,
went there.
How is that going to motivate you? You know, you just want, you want to be able to write great songs. In the meantime, somebody's sitting over there, and you're going, oh, I suck. I'm terrible. I can't play.
It did. It woke me up. But, you know, being from a small town, I wanted to be a musician, and there was nobody in the town that played instruments. So just going there and seeing that, I'm a lead guitarist I shall not be. But songwriting, you know, the emotional side of it, I felt like I could absorb and try something there.
I wanted to ask about the title of the album, because I wanted to get where you're coming from on this. It's called See What You Started By Continuing. Now, is that See What You Started By Continuing, or is it See What You Started By Continuing?
I don't know. We just actually, when we got back together to start making the record, we listened to live recordings of us in the mid-90s, and we were like, oh my God, we were rocking. You could feel the urgency. You could feel the fun, and we kind of lost that a little bit. And so it was for us to go back in the studio and record live as much as possible, you know, because we recorded at my house, and go back to having fun. You know, we started this band, as I always say, to really not have a proper job, to get chicks and have fun.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order, but, you know.
Well, I tell you what, with hearing this and playing it on the air, it brought me right back to Shine and to Gel.
Cool.
And, you know, I'm like, there they are doing it again, yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, cool. Was that kind of what you were going after?
Yeah, and I love the lyrics. I love telling the story. My wife hates it. But like I said, I didn't have the lyrics. And we had a call. We had a two-week run. And the car was to pick us up at 6 in the morning. And my wife was... I was trying to get myself organized for a two-week run, and some body parts kept popping out under the sheets, and she'd go, hey, you want some of this? I'm like, sweetie, I got to go. Like, early morning, a few minutes later, hey, sweetie, you want some of this? And be another body part. So I got in the car, and I was like, that's kind of a fun title and a fun subject, you know?
Yeah.
Flirtation in the rolling bedroom.
Right.
So that's where the lyrics came, and I wrote it, first time I've ever written, in a car.
And you said she doesn't like it.
She hates that
She
story.
Hates it.
I'm an honest man, sweetie. Come on.
Well, we got everything all tuned up and ready to go. We have the Budweiser studio cam on, and you guys are ready to play. So
let's do it.
What are we going to hear?
December.
All right. December.
In October.
Yeah. Collect the Soul, 93.3 WMMR.
From my hands, you can tell just how you think I am. Just tell my son to juggle me. Will your cup run for her again? About, don't think about, I'm telling you it now, baby, just spit me out, don't worry about, don't speak it out, turn your head now, baby, just spit me out. Thank you.
why follow me into higher ground? Lost, I just swear I am. Don't throw away your best needs and be on some vanity. You don't scream about, don't think about. Turn your head now, baby, just spit me out. Don't worry about, don't speak about. Turn your head now. Spit me out. Don't scream about. Don't think aloud. Turn your head now, baby. Just spit me out. Don't worry about. Don't speak it out. Turn your head now, baby. Just spit me out. Just spit me out.
Soul, Ed Roland, Jesse Triplett here from the band on 93.3 WMMR. Ed, I wanted to ask about, you know, taking things out on the road, and obviously these songs are your babies, and you know them better than anybody, and you've played them for years and years and years. Are there times when you decide, we're going to rework this one, we're gonna do this a little bit different, or I'm going to go back and listen to the recording that people know it, that have grown up listening to it, and see if we can recreate it that way? Or does it...
A little bit of both, especially okay. with the first CD, because that was... Hints was just a batch of demos I made in the basement over a five-year period, so it truly wasn't a band. We consider the self-titled second release the band. It was. So the first song we ever recorded together was Jail. So when we go back and we do Shine, even Shine, you know, we kind of recreate what we were hoping we'd get to record. What's up, Pierre? What are you doing? Sneaking in here like that.
Well, I it's really tough to get up this early.
You're telling me.
Yeah. I know. Your bus is outside.
I know. Country comfort creature well, comfort.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, so especially on the first stuff, we kind of dug in there a little bit on this run. We're doing like three, I think. And then I'm kind of enjoying playing piano now, so I'll jump on the piano, and it's just fun to entertain ourselves, because if we can't have fun with it, we can't expect anybody else to, if that makes sense. And then there's some songs you can't really deviate too far away, because it'll get too,
and that's
people start throwing things.
We've talked about this time and time again, where you know it's two different dynamics. You know, you're the artist, you've created the music, you want to, you know, live in it and experience it, and we hear it a certain way, and it's like in the concert experience, 9 times out of 10, and I don't know, as an artist, if this pains you to hear it, you want to hear it the way you heard it on the album, you know? And that's, and unless, you know, sometimes there could be a nice flight of fancy, but you're like, yeah, that's...
Yeah, we don't, like I said, we don't drift too far.
Yeah, away. Yeah.
You know, Jesse's not going to start rapping the second verse.
Right, right, yeah.
That wacky. But I think instrumentation-wise, sometimes it's fun to challenge yourself on, like, doing the piano and then Jesse doing slides. Just to...
Change it up
a little bit. Nothing. You're not going to lose the melody. You're not going to lose the core of the song.
Hoping that your enjoyment channels through to
correct.
The audience. Yeah, I got you. Yeah,
I love what your band has done over the years as far as being accessible and also working with radio. I remember when Shine hit. It was before I was really got a career in radio, or I was just starting a career in radio, and
just came out of foot modeling.
Yeah, you know, No, it was in St. Louis, and you guys did a free show.
Ah.
And you had this huge hit, and you did this free show, and it was massive.
It was fun. People got hurt. I can remember that.
Really?
Yeah, and it's kind of a fun story, because I went over to make sure everybody was okay, because, you know, we're Southern men, gentlemen, you know?
Yeah.
And there was this really pretty girl, and she was hurt, and I got her number, made sure she was okay for the next couple of months.
It's going to require a lot of injections.
I know. It required a lot of my attention.
Well, Pierre's...
I do remember that show, because I did. I did meet a young lady there for a couple of months.
Interesting. You remember her name? I might have known her.
No.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Dated her years ago there, young man.
Pierre did come in, and I bring that up because of the relationship with radio and with this radio station as well. And Pierre, you've gotten to know Ed and the guys.
Well, God, they've done archive sessions for us before. They've done spring break concerts for us. We've had a long-time friendship with you guys. And
hell, we hung out in Vegas one night. And you just showed up out of the middle. I'm in the middle of the show, and I'm like, I went over to Dean. I was like, is that Pierre? You know, you're kind of confused. I'm like, where exactly? Are we in Vegas? So I stopped the show, and I was like, Pierre.
I came to Vegas to see you.
I know. I was like, get back here. We hung out all night.
We had fun times. Quite a lot on the bus until I was with you till the bus took off, in fact.
Did we leave you?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
It was all right. I had oil a spotted machine.
You were doing two shows a night at the Sands, right, Pierre?
I was opening for Sinatra.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you guys about the record because obviously you're Georgia boys, but this is clearly not Georgia on the cover. It's a great shot of you guys out in a desert somewhere and the interior.
The flats, Salt Flats.
Ah, Bonneville Salt Flats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. How long take to get those shots?
We're kind of quick. 10 minutes,
huh.
And we had the car, and so we were more interested in driving around in the flats as fast as we could, and the minivan would allow.
How fast did you get up to?
We got to a top speed of 86.
Wow. Tires caught on fire.
Yeah, that's where they test all the rocket cars and all the, yeah, that's it.
You know, you guys, Preston and Steve were talking about albums that you can listen through all the way from the beginning to end. In the true sense of an album, you mentioned AC/DC's Back in Black recently. But I've been listening to this record, and it's one of those kind of records for all the same reasons you were talking about earlier. Ed has this ability to write one song after the other, you know, and from this, which is the song that you played, Into Hurricane, Exposed, Confession, and Are You the Answer, number 5, is just brilliant.
Thank you.
It's so cool.
Thank you.
But it's one song after the other, and Jesse, your guitar playing on Without Me at the end, those riffs at the end, I mean...
Jesse's killing it, man.
What a
great addition, and came in and kicked us in the ass.
But this is one of those kind of records you can listen to, you know, from beginning to end, and I still believe in the album.
I do, too. That's the era I grew up in, you know.
Do you have a deal with Walmart with this? Because what I was reading is that you, and some bands have done this, have gone in and re-recorded some of your greatest hits.
Correct.
And the reason being, I understand, is so that you own them so that the previous record companies don't own them. But I got to think how bizarre that is to go in and re-record and try to match it as close as you can to what it was, a song that you recorded 20 years ago.
It was torture.
Torture.
Because you do have to, once you go, now that, yeah. You did have to go back and kind of match as close as you can. And, you know, your singing style changes, your voice, you know, the wonderful upkeep of my lifestyle over the last 20 years
sure.
made my voice just stay the same. And, you know, it was Sean Grove, who lives in the Philly area. He's our engineer, producer, mixer. I mean, line after line, you just go, nope, nope. And you'd hear the original and go, God, I don't know if I can... First off, why did I sound like that in the first place? Second, how am I going to do that again?
I mean, no matter what, even if there are, you know, ways that they can trick it and make it sound as it did before, it still has to be arduous.
Now you tell me that.
I assume still it must make you hate the material at a certain
point. It also
point.
Made me realize, we were talking earlier, like, over the years, sometimes you start changing the melodies just a little bit.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize... just the minor details, and you've gotten so used to it, you can't even hear it. So just I had to sit there and listen over. And the last thing I want to do is listen to these songs over and over again to get the phrasing and the melody just to, you know.
Do they become like, you know, in a bizarre way, do the songs become like, you know, they're almost living entities because they afford you your livelihood in a way. You know what I'm saying?
And they are, especially when we play live. Like, there is nothing greater. Once again, people ask me, do I ever get tired of playing Shine? I'm like, no. It's the most wonderful thing on stage to play it because it takes a different energy every night with the crowd.
Right.
But when I go home, do I pop Collective Soul and Spotify?
No. You know what? Like, your life changes over the years, so... Therefore, the lyrics and what they mean to you change over the years. Do you are there any lyrics in your songs that you sort of change up just because
you don't feel that way anymore?
You don't feel that way anymore? Or
that's a great question. No, I actually, especially when we play them live, there's nights where I can relive what I was going through emotionally when I wrote those songs. It's weird. I can get senses of the smell where, like, if I was near the beach or we're recording in Miami, I can sense that.
A mnemonic sort of thing going on. Where
I'm just channeling up on stage.
Yeah. Think about banging that chick back in St. Louis. Yeah.
You are
hence
hurt.
The song Jail.
Yeah. There's another Southern band that I really like called the Avett Brothers, and they have a song called Murdered in the City, and those lyrics have changed because at the end of the song he's talking about family members, but some family members have joined us, you know, since the song was first written. So now he includes, instead of, like, you know, mother and sister, it's about his kids and stuff like that. So
that's cool. Sort
of where that question was derived.
That's a cool question. I like that.
Do you ever look back at lyrics that you wrote when you were in your 20s thinking, I thought these were so profound when I was 24, and look at them now, and you're like, what the hell was I thinking?
Quite often.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should say that, because we had these gentlemen in studio who, from a Disney show, and his problem right now is that he just doesn't feel like he's being taken seriously because he's young and he's 21 and he comes from the Disney camp. And I said to him, I said, you know, do you know how old the Doors were when they first hit? They were 21.
11.
So, I don't know why it is, but we all took the Doors seriously, and I'm 40 now, and the songs that I love from the Doors were written when they were kids.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But that's having the career that we've had, which we're very blessed. It's kind of fun to look and you kind of go, oh yeah, that's what I felt like then, and mm-hmm. You grow, like, you know, marriage brings in new songs. Having children brings in new ideas to songs. So.
Right.
It's all part of a process, too. I mean, everything that happened makes you who you are. Right. So there's nothing, no sense of embarrassment. I mean, maybe, okay, I mean, it was, you know, you're younger and you say, okay, that was a different mindset. But that all needed to be that way.
Right. I never look back on it embarrassed. I look at it, if anything, just a learning curve.
Right,
you know,
right,
trying to figure out the songwriting style and the vocals, everything. So, like you said, they're talking about the Doors. They're kids. I mean, how in the world do you even
crazy.
Know what you are at that age?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, if you got a chance, we'd love to play another song or have you play another song. That's
love
cool.
To.
Excellent.
All right, Pierre, this one's for you then.
All right, here we go.
Brought it up.
Collective Soul on MMR.
Promises. Where they're gonna lead me to? I still have wishes that haven't come true. Well, I toss and I turn, and what this life it can give. Yeah, and I toss and I turn, and how this life I should live. Are you the answer to all I need? Are you the answer? The answer for me. Patience, it's leaving my side. I'm gonna circle back, see what I can find. Let the sky rain down on me, all I should know. Let the sky rain down on me, wisdom to grow. Are you the answer to all? Are you the answer? The answer for me. Are you the answer? Are you the answer? Are you the answer? The answer for me.
Yeah!
Collected Soul 93.3 WMMR. That is a beautiful song.
That's a Thanks, good dude. One. It's a great song.
Thanks,
great
bro. Song.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the record because I understand it's going to come out on vinyl.
Yes, we were told it was coming out on day of release. But it's, and that's all I asked for in this new deal. I was like, I don't, whatever, points, my, I want it on vinyl. Because I collect vinyl, and that's one of the ways. I have a 17-year-old son, and that's one of our connecting points. We go to the record store, and he turns me on to what he's listening to, and I'll go back to what Dad grew up on, and it's a good connecting thing. Getting to my point, they messed up, so it's going to be another 3-4 months before it's on vinyl, but I got to have vinyl. We've only had one ever on vinyl, and it was Discipline Break.
Breakdown.
And I went online, and it was $300. I'm like,
oh, to buy your own friggin' album.
Give me a family discount. It's mine.
And we do a vinyl feature every day on my show, so we play it every day. And, you know, I think it's the three-dimensional nature of the record, you know, the whole experience of sitting there with it and the turntable and putting the needle on the record. There's something magical about it.
Jesse can up in it's my son's room, but he splits time. But when he's gone, it becomes Daddy's room, and it's vinyl everywhere. And it's my wife will come home. She's like, "Oh my God," because there's just records thrown everywhere. You know, and once again, it makes you put that needle down, and you got to walk. You got to walk. What you got to listen to it. You know what I'm saying? It's not quick turn, so it makes you listen to the whole. I go back to the whole record. I just enjoy the whole experience.
When we first switched to CDs. I remember playing Jungle Land from Bruce Springsteen, and we had just gotten two CD machines in the studio. We still had the turntables, and I go, well, which one is playing and which one isn't? And I pressed it, and I pressed in the middle of Jungle Land, which in Philadelphia is equivalent to being run out of town.
Yeah.
You know? And I go, oh, blank, but it wasn't blank. And with I mentioned that because if it was a record, you could just put the needle right back down in the same spot.
Right.
You know, and going, what the F do I do?
But you know, it was a negative, and I mean this in a heartwarming way about listening on vinyl, is if you put on like a really rocking song and you start jumping around air guitaring, it would skip,
yes.
And then you'd have to start from the very beginning all over again. Because you can't rock out to the middle of a song. You got to go for the whole thing.
You put foam under it. Like, yeah. You put foam under the
under the record player?
And that keeps
I rock out, dude. I'm not afraid.
Nice.
I remember that. Put the Fitbit on and get up there and dance a little bit to my vinyl.
How many vinyl albums do you think you have?
I don't know.
Because you have to put 2000. Those in alphabetical order,
2000?
Right?
No, I don't. I'm all over the place with it. I just go through and I go, God, I forgot about that. And it's so inspiring to me.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not alphabetical order. I try to keep the bands together, and somehow I'll know where they are. So
that's the better method. Hey. Is there one particular that's a collector's item or one album that stands above the rest in importance to you?
Right now, James Gang. We listened to the other day that we're all big Joe Walsh fans.
He was just in town 2 nights ago.
Yeah. Was he? Did you guys see it? Was it cool?
I missed it, unfortunately. But he's such a character. He's
man, great. I got to meet him, and it was fun. My son at the time was, my youngest was 4. We played Ringo Starr's birthday party, the other band, Jesse and I and Sweet Tea. It's like, this is the coolest thing ever. And my son's kind of he's a character. I think he was 4. And to watch him and Joe sit over there and make faces at each other, it was like, they were kids. They were just having a blast. I'm like, I want to make a face with Joe.
You've had such a great and colorful life. I mean, I think your first show was Johnny Cash, and soon on in your concert going career, you saw Elton John, and then coming full cycle among the many people that you've gotten to hang with is Elton, and you live in Atlanta, and he lives at least portion of the time in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He played on at least one or two records. Have you seen him lately? What's he up to?
I haven't. We've been on the road. He was in Atlanta and called, and he's touring. He, you know, he just keeps on touring. So he called, and I wasn't there. He did the Music Midtown this year in Atlanta, which was big. But, you know, putting a record out, getting a record together, both of us are busy. Hopefully we'll catch. I was trying to get out to Vegas to see him, and I couldn't do that. So,
Have you ever played on stage with him?
No.
That would be awesome.
I'm not that good of friends with him yet. I am. I think I am.
But he, different story.
Knew it.
Another big name that somebody was texting. I totally forgot about this, but Dolly Parton covered you guys years ago. Did you forge a relationship with her, I assume?
I didn't.
No.
We talked on the phone, and I sent her flowers, done everything. Once again, it's it's tough. The schedules don't allow that.
She's the real deal. She was so sweet.
Yeah. She was just so sweet and so kind words. But trust me, I sent letters, love letters, flowers. And my brother Dean, seriously, since he was a kid, had a crush on Dolly. So he was the one really trying to work his way in there. I'm like, dude, sit down.
Yeah. I mean, she's had, I think if you look in the Rolling Stone Encyclopedia of Rock, she's got... How many?
It's like 6,000
of songs. Yeah.
She has 6,000 songs.
One of the coolest. People ask what's cool. That's one of the coolest when you have a songwriter like Dolly Parton who doesn't need to cover anybody's songs.
Yeah,
she's
got
just wonderful songs. The cover was truly one of the rewards of my career. Like, it was just so special.
I was curious if this is a reward. There was a video on YouTube recently of a cat singing along to one of your songs. Did you see it?
Yeah.
For those who haven't, I have audio of it right here. It is. It's awesome. Because the video, it's not it's edited. Right, the cat is going along in real time to that.
Yeah, that's probably how I sounded back then, too. I had to actually get it. This is true. When I was recording, because it was a basement, and just to get the sound that I wanted, there was an empty toilet paper dispenser, and I just put it up to my mouth to come up with, that's the sound.
That's, yeah? Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So anybody at home, you want to know how to do it? Just empty that toilet paper and put it to your mouth. Yeah.
Like that. So that wasn't an effect. You were using a toilet paper.
Correct.
Wow.
I didn't have any effects other than whatever.
No effects.
I'm not going there. I guess I should stop right there.
Ed, you'll do some interesting things with your voice, and this has it as well, in the chorus as well. When it's, you know, how am I going to love you? When you kind of.
That's
you
my getting, Elvis, man.
That's what I was going to say. I totally thought it was an Elvis.
It's an Elvis, and then I did my best David Lee Roth impersonation with a yelp, whatever you want to call it. If you listen to it. But it's all Elvis, baby.
Nice. Excellent. Well, no, it's great. I mean, when you're doing that, you'd kind of leaning in tight to the mic and kind of...
Hips are moving, baby.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, man.
Fried dinner sandwiches.
Yeah. Well, make sure you go see these guys live. Pierre, are you going to be?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be on that show, right?
I never miss them.
That's fantastic.
I mean, they're so great in concert, and I'm not saying that because Ed's here. I'm saying it because he paid me earlier.
I willed all my vinyl to you.
he did. It's a really nice collection. To see them from the moment they take off to the moment the show ends, and it's a long set, and I've been looking at some of the songs you're pulling out, and they're just great. It's so worth going to.
I love it.
We look forward to it. We love it, dude.
And make sure you check out the new album, See What You Started by Continuing. Officially just came out a couple of weeks ago, and grab that and go and see the guys. So thank you, guys. Collective Soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Both Ed and Jesse here this morning. We're going to break. We're going to come back in a second. Stay right there.
Like the Preston and Steve Show podcast? Check out MMR's other audio on demand at WMMR.com or on the MMR mobile app.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
And the Bizarre File is brought to you by the October Auto Fest at Hyundai City. This fall, AIR has brought out their best deals of the year. More savings, more for your trade, more overall value. Shop now at HyundaiCity.com.
We'll begin with this. A large firework exploded inside an apartment building on Friday night.
No one was injured in the blast, although 30 of the building's windows were blown out and multiple fire doors were damaged. I mean, this was a big one. A spokesman said the blast rocked the entire building. It's an absolute miracle that no one was injured and, moreover, that we're not fighting a fire right now.
What caused it?
More than 80 residents were evacuated. They're trying to figure that out. I mean, it was somebody had a mortar shell and they blew it up.
Jesus.
Authorities were investigating to determine who or what caused the commercial-grade mortar to go off near a stairwell in the second-story hallway.
Tonight's the night. I'm going to blow up that mortar shell.
Yeah, among those.
But I don't really want to drive anywhere. Yeah, I'll just do it here.
Among those investigating the accident are Sheriff's Office Bomb Squad, the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco Firearms and Explosives, and the Aggravated Felonies Unit. So they're not messing around.
Yeah.
Whoever did this is going to go to jail for a long time. They're going to face some serious charges. So, yeah, I mean, it's a bomb, basically.
Yes!
A beaver protecting its dam attacked two Central Oregon men who fell into a river and got taken to the hospital.
Nice beaver.
The beaver? No, not a nice beaver.
The men were exploring Thursday night when they climbed onto a beaver dam and got attacked by the animal protecting its turf. Those things can get big, man. They really can. Their injuries are not considered life-threatening. One man quickly climbed out of the Deschutes River near Lava Island and sought help for his friend whose clothing got caught on some logs.
Oh, it was a beaver.
The trapped man managed to get out of the water just as a deputy arrived.
Those suckers are huge, and a lot of times they're disease-ridden.
Beavers?
Disease-ridden, yeah.
Yeah.
Disease-ridden beavers.
Yes. Oh, they're the worst kind.
An Alabama teenager was arrested Thursday after he followed through on a bizarre threat to kill his mother's chickens unless she mended the relationship between him and his girlfriend.
Okay, so if she helped work on the relationship, the chickens would live.
Yep.
If not, they would die.
Yep. Hayden Smith, who was 18, was arrested and charged with domestic violence, the third degree, and criminal mischief. Deputies say the situation started when Smith texted his mother threatening to kill one of her chickens every 15 minutes until she contacted his girlfriend's parents and attempted to mend.
I can't believe you put one of the chickens on the phone. Lola? Is that you, Lola?
He threatened to kill one of her chickens every 15 minutes until she contacted his girlfriend's parents and attempted.
I must warn you, I have a special set of kill skills that makes me a nightmare for chicken killers like you.
And attempt to mend their broken relationship.
Let the chickens go and I'll let you live.
Smith gave his mother a deadline of noon before he started to kill the chickens.
I'll throw out a dead chicken every 10 minutes.
He also threatened to burn his mother's house down, kill any deputies that arrived on the scene, and kill himself. But he's starting with the chicken.
Young love, guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's so begin. Why did the girl want him back again?
Smith then began sending his mother picture messages of.
I'm gonna kill these chickens, and it's not like you can eat them. Wait, you can.
Yeah, actually, yeah. So he began sending his mother pictures and on text messages of each chicken he killed at 15 minute intervals. He killed six of them. He went through with it.
Six chickens.
That's right. Yep. There's no word on Smith's current relationship status, but we're hoping for the best.
If anything was going to win her back, it was that chicken murder.
Yeah. On Saturday, CNN devoted an entire segment to what it called an ISIS flag among a sea of rainbow colors. CNN International's Lucy Pauley described spotting the flag at a gay pride march in London. She pronounced it to be an attempt to mimic the ISIS flag, the black and white with distinctive lettering. And upon seeing the flag, she reported it to nearby police. She noted, however, that if you look at the flag closely, you'll see it's clearly not Arabic. Pauley is correct that the flag is not Arabic. It is, in fact, not any language. Rather, it consists of crude drawings of sex toys.
No, really?
That's what it is.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's all sorts of dildos.
I mean,
stuff.
They had a graphic on the screen and everything.
This is an outrage.
Yeah. Pauley was joined by CNN national security analyst Peter Bergen to discuss the matter. During the segment, the camera panned to repeatedly on the flag in question, and you could see clearly that they were sex toys. CNN has not yet commented.
That would have to be the most conflicted group of people, gay members of ISIS.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you do?
We're just trying to get a foothold here.
Mm-hmm. A huge snake's big meal in South Africa has turned out to be its last after the death of a 12-foot-long African rock python.
Park rangers opened its stomach inside. They found a 30-pound porcupine.
Whoa!
Its needle-sharp quills seem to have punctured the snake's digestive tract and may have contributed to its death.
That'd be like you eating a pincushion.
Yeah. The engorged snake was first spotted by a mountain biker. Visitors showed up to at the park to observe the snake. It was still alive. And to speculate what it had eaten, you know, it had a big lump inside of it. Though the exact cause of death is unknown, spectators and the porcupine may be to blame. A spokesperson said, with all of the human interaction, this could have caused stress, and the python would then regurgitate the meal up with all the quills causing problems. Pythons, which are some of the largest snakes in the world, kill their prey, of course, by constriction. Some species are known to eat animals as large as antelope and deer. Their prey is swallowed whole and may take days or weeks to digest fully.
The quills on a porcupine, and they have them over at the aquarium. Mm-hmm. They're big. I mean, they're large.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
big they'd time. Rip you up.
Yep. So I don't know what you can trust on the internet these days, but I saw a picture last week of this snake that had been eating this guy's sheep, right?
Yeah.
So the guy puts up an electric fence, and this is the story behind the picture, and he ends up killing the snake with an electric fence, and it is gigantic, and you see its mouth caught on the barbs of the fence, and, I mean, it seems like with his jaws agape, it's probably about 2 feet, 3 feet big.
I think that's a really old picture. That one's been around for a while,
yeah.
So I think it's legit.
Is
but,
it?
But
is it like the one with the black guy with all the billiard balls in his mouth?
It's a lot like that. Yeah.
All right. Anyhow, that's what I have in the bizarre file for you this morning. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
93.3 WMMR proudly supports the inaugural Market Street Run for Blue, presented by Wawa, Sunday, October 27th. The event benefits the Philadelphia Police Foundation with a run through historic Old City to 30th Street Station and back for a post-run festival at Penn's Landing featuring food and beverages courtesy of Wawa, awards for top finishers in multiple age groups, and fun for the whole family. Click events at WMMR.com for all the details and to get signed up. Sunday, October 27th. It's the Market Street Run for Blue, presented by Wawa. 93.3 WMMR is putting Philly first.
Our next guest in studio, on screen, he is a man of few words, but he's the biggest thing in Westeros that you will find. In real life, he is Europe's strongest man. He is the world's strongest Viking. And he is going to be at the Philadelphia Ren Fair. Please welcome, you know him as the Mountain from Game of Thrones, Hapthor Julius Bjornsson. Yeah. Good morning, Hapthor.
Good morning.
Am I getting that right? Hapthor.
Hapthor Julius Bjornsson, yes, correct.
Hapthor Julius, okay.
Julius is my middle name.
Yep.
Sometimes it gets forgotten, but, you know, that's okay.
Okay. Yeah. And you're originally from Iceland.
That's correct, yeah.
And is that where you still reside now, or have you since moved away from there?
I'm still in Iceland. I'm still there, still live there, but, you know, I travel a lot around the world. I'm always on the road, so...
You were in the Strongest Man competition last year in Los Angeles, correct?
I was in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, competing at the World Strongest Man competition. Just a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Yes.
So that'd be, and you divide your time. Obviously, Game of Thrones is just a world phenomenon, and you're part of that. But I was watching a documentary about Iceland last night and about the world's strongest men, and they make the point that basically this area generates more competitive strong men than any other place in the world. And that's, you know, you could testify to that fact, correct?
Yes, of course. I mean, we are only 300,000 people who live there. It's a small country, but, you know, we have won the title more than any other country. Eight times. That's incredible. And soon, hopefully, it will be ninth title.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed a gym in this documentary. Is it Yakovo or something like that?
Yagabol,
yeah, and it's everybody in there, Preston, is the size of a bus, and they're all. But this is, it's a fascinating sport because it's just you're challenging yourself constantly. What do you think it is about Iceland and the area that generates just obviously the genetics are there, but what else? What about the spirit of the people?
Well, I always say It's something in the water, I guess.
Yeah.
You have so clean and good water.
Yeah, right. And glacial water.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And it's just we are hard workers, always worked very, very, very hard. And Vikings, of course, it's in our blood to be strong. And you know, we are the strongest people, I say it always. And also we have the most beautiful women.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we would agree with that, too, yeah.
I'm just wondering, can you take a punch, too, or are you just strong?
I am strong, you know, but, you know, I have taken a few punches, but I don't
what
like
jackass
it.
Hit he you? Doesn't. What jackass hit you?
Yeah. Well, just in the ring with my friends.
Okay.
I have a few friends at home who was, you know, doing boxing or MMA or some kind of... And you know, they like to challenge me a lot to get to the ring. And you know,
how do you do in the ring? Because I was wondering about it with MMA. Does that interest you at all?
No, it does not. Actually, not at the moment. Right now, I'm just focusing on my career in strongman.
You did play professional basketball in Iceland for a couple of years, did you not?
I did, yes.
Which
did.
It amazes me. Of your size, you obviously have velocity, too, if you could play competitive basketball at that level.
Well, when I played, I was around 200 pounds lighter. So
you had it. Oh, my God. So you packed on 200 pounds of muscle plus?
Yeah.
Jesus. That,
yeah.
What do you weigh right now?
Right now, I weigh probably around 400 pounds.
400 pounds.
And how tall are you?
6'9", around 6'9", yeah.
I've read that your caloric intake on a daily basis is around 8,000 calories.
8,000 to 10,000 calories.
8,000 to 10,000 calories.
Mine's about 2,100.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
Now, we're looking at a picture of Half Thor when he played basketball. That's another person. That doesn't even look like you. That's amazing. Yeah, you're actually slim in that.
Yeah.
Look at that. At 6'9", I could understand why he'd be a basketball player.
It was an ankle injury or stopped
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Ankle injury. Well, I broke my ankle twice. I had to have surgery twice. So, second time, I decided to take a little bit break. I went to the gym. Well, I've been training in the gym almost all my life. Mm-hmm. But when I stopped running a lot, I just kept on putting on muscle and got strong very fast. So
it's incredible.
I wanted to ask you about Game of Thrones, Half Thor, because the first season is where we meet the Mountain on the show. I've read the books. I'm familiar with the character. He doesn't appear too much in there. But it was a different actor who played him in that first season. And I don't know if it was scheduling conflicts, but how did they decide upon you becoming Gregor Clegane?
It's a long story. Well, they were back in 2013. They were filming in Iceland at that moment, and they heard about this big, strong, powerful guy. And they were actually looking for a new guy to act the Mountain. I got an email at first, and I was actually a big fan of the show.
Okay? Oh, were you?
Okay. A big fan of the show. So when I got the email, you know, at that time, I wasn't really, you know, that famous. Just, you know, I was famous in the strongman world, but not like now.
Right.
So when I got the email, you know, I thought it was someone just was joking around or something. Because I read the email, I was like, what? Who is messing with me now? Who is messing with me now?
Right.
But you know, then I had call from them like a week later, and at that time they were filming in Iceland, and everything went well, and I got the role.
Nice. We had seen a video of you doing an event. For one of the strongman competitions, I'm not sure if it was, I think it might have been World's Strongest Viking, where you did the log carry. And this was...
astonishing.
Yeah, it weighs 1,433 pounds. This is, 1,433 pounds. So did you break a record with that lift? Did I hear correctly?
Yeah, it was a 1,000-year-old record.
What? 1,000 years.
They kept records 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
When you lift something 1,000 pounds or more, yeah, they keep records.
They write that down.
Yeah. All right.
And I broke that record that day. I took 3 steps with it, I think.
3 steps with 1,000+ pounds on your shoulders.
On his shoulders.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah.
Okay, when you're about to do something like that, I mean, there's, even though it's, you're not lifting it very high, you're still lifting it all the way up and moving it. I mean, you could have gotten hurt really, really bad doing that. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the last guy who did it, he actually broke his back and never was the same after that.
Oh, my God.
And you're dealing, and we were talking about your basketball injury. Does that, has that's never been an issue with you? Your ankle, everything's been fine with that? Obviously, if you're lifting stuff like this, it's not that much. But you've, watching the documentary about the strongman, Any little injury or thing that comes back to haunt them can be a career killer, but you're obviously going great guns with that.
I've been lucky so far with injuries, and my sport haven't had any bad injuries so far. So, yeah, I've been very lucky so far.
And the nature of these competitions, I love watching them because they really seem to have a good respect for the history of the games throughout the centuries, and, you know, with the picking up of the large ball and all of that stuff and the way stuff is carried. But there is actually a gym in the area. A guy we know runs it, and it's all focused on this. And now you'll see these cross training and CrossFit stuff where they've kind of adopted some of those strongmen exercises and are doing them. It's now becoming very popular. Have you noticed an increase in the popularity of the sport worldwide in the recent years?
Yeah, I think it's getting more popular each year. You know, CrossFit is extremely popular right now, and I always say CrossFit is it's similar like strongman, but just for the regular people.
For pussies, like,
yeah, I was gonna say people who aren't strong.
Stevie just said, like, well, I didn't want to say
just
it,
the regular
but, yeah.
people, not regular like me. Like,
yes, there's
I'm more like a beast.
Hafthor, I wanted to ask you about your tattoos. You have some pretty incredible tattoos, and they would fit in Game of Thrones world. There's a dragon on your left arm, and I'm not quite sure what's on your right arm. But do you have any tattoos that reflect anything from modern times that have to get? Would have to get covered up while filming? Like, is there a Van Halen 1984 tattoo on there anyway?
If you're asking if I need to, well, when I'm
for the TV
show.
Do they get covered up for filming?
Yes, they do. Yes, it's they make over it, they put over it.
Because the dragon tattoo would fit in nicely in Game of Thrones world, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the tattoo is actually quite new.
Yeah,
okay. This year the dragon tattoo, it's only like it's almost a year old now, so. But, you know, they put over it like a makeup.
Yeah, okay. they would have
to. Right, so I'm going to ask a question about the show. If you've not seen the season finale last year, this is your opportunity to turn the radio down. But I'm going to ask Hafthor about this scene. It's a big, big, important battle. It's between Oberyn Martell and the Mountain, and it's the climactic end of the season. There's a part, spoiler alert!
Yes, you've been warned.
Where the Mountain actually squeezes Oberyn's head and it basically explodes when he does this. what did they have you, were those your hands and were you actually squeezing and exploding a prop of some sort, I guess?
Yeah, well, it was not actually his.
Yes, I get that happening.
Well, that's really taken a... Listen, we have a job for you. You have to be willing to have your head crushed.
I wasn't sure if it was CGI or if they had a mannequin that he was squeezing the head of.
I'm sure his lawyer would have gotten in touch with you eventually. You crushes it. No, but what like is a watermelon?
Yeah, so what did they have there? What were you squeezing?
Well, it's kind of secret.
It's a secret.
Yes.
Okay. It was the guy, Brent.
I can't watch that scene ever again.
It's nasty.
It's so nasty.
Yeah. But
now for the fighting, the weapon training, the guy who trains you guys to do that was the trainer on the movie Gladiator, correct? Like he's like the best in the world.
He's very, very, very good, very talented and to have. So it's a great guy to have around to teach you. Was, you know, very great, like very good, like you, like most of the people who have watched the scene.
Yeah.
Me and Pedro Pascal were both well prepared for the fight, and it happened very well. So it's, you know, it's because we had very good training.
I assume it has to be. It has to be very precise. You have to, the way you would choreograph a dance, because regardless, you're still swinging at each other, and you're still, you know, any injuries that you received while doing
well,
that?
Well, I had, you know, I was training every day, the whole day for a few weeks, you know, learning the fight.
Yeah.
And the sword was so heavy. I remember I had so much pain in my biceps.
Really? Yeah.
And my forearms for like holding the sword, because it's not a normal sword. It's unreal big, and you know, it's heavy as well. So
yeah,
just by swinging it every day, I was like, after the fight, I was like few weeks very bad hurt.
Very bad hurt. Yeah, yeah. It's a repetitious movement, and it's a repetitive injury, like almost like carpal tunnel or something where you're hurting that. Yeah, man, Jesus, it's brutal.
We
yeah.
were out in the green room before the interview started, and I got a picture with Hafthor, and Casey walks up to him, and he says, now, if you picked me up by the neck, would that kill me? and Hafthor just says, yes.
Yeah. I'm planning pictures for after the...
Casey, yeah. As we're sitting here doing the interview, I'm thinking, I wonder if he could, like, you know, pick me up by the head, and I could just hold on to his wrist, so it wouldn't really actually hurt, but it looked like he was holding me by my head. But
how many times a day do you get asked to pick people up? You must get it constantly.
I get it quite often, yeah.
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 And it's and there's probably some people you just don't want to pick up.
Few, yeah.
Well, listen, you will beat the Philadelphia Ren Fair.
This is great.
That's correct. And actually, it's here in town, so...
Yes, yeah. So. And it's this weekend. What all will you be doing? What can people come and experience with you, Hafthor?
Well, I'll be there, you know, selling some T-shirts. They can have some photos with me. I'll be there training some people, and I'll be doing a lot of stuff, you know.
What kind of training? Like strongman training?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'll be, you know, yeah.
It's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
And we do have the Ren Fair in Pennsylvania, but it is a traveling distance. It's right now in our backyard, so if you've ever flirted with the idea of going out and seeing what this is about, this is a perfect opportunity. And for Game of Thrones fans, it's a win-win.
Exactly. So it's, yeah.
I would imagine when you do travel from city to city that... Because there are, like, we have friends of ours from Iron Sport Gym, Steve Pulcinella. We had these guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
They came and, like, flipped cars for us and all that sort of stuff. So when you travel from city to city, do people, you know, hunt you down and try and get you to work out in their gyms and stuff like that?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And you're doing CrossFit, though?
I like CrossFit. I know Annie Mist quite well. Annie Mist, Thorsdottir, she's from Iceland, and she has won the title... The CrossFit title a few times. She's from Iceland, so yeah.
I don't peg you as a Zumba kind of guy.
I like Zumba.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Big smile.
Well, but is there something that you do that we would not think this is what you do for a, whether it be, you know, an activity, a workout, something like that?
Yoga or, you know.
Well, I've been to yoga.
Yeah?
And, you know... I like frisbee golf. Do you know that?
Frisbee golf. Yeah, that looks golf. Cool.
Actually, it's a place down in Delaware. So if you're looking to do that, there's a little park down there they do disc golf. Yeah.
I gotta imagine when you travel though. As you're walking down the aisle, and even if it's a first class or whatever, people have got to be going, please don't sit next to me. Please don't sit next to me. Right?
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
There are so many different ways for you to make money, and right now you're focused on strongman stuff. I'm sure that the WWE has contacted you. I don't know if there's any plans to do that. Any arm wrestling competitions? Do you do anything like that?
No arm wrestling contest, no. But, you know, yes, I've had a few offers so far, few.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I'm very focused on my goals right now. Mm-hmm. I like acting very much, and I wanna stay more into that. But also, I wanna achieve my goal in Strongman. I wanna bring the title back home.
Okay. Yes.
To do that, I must be focused, and you know, it's a lot of opportunities going on. But you know, you must be focused.
You got to be focused, yeah. And especially in this, in that, in your sport of choice.
Exactly. Right, absolutely.
Is the money good in strongman competitions?
Not.
No. I mean, sponsorship.
I'll tell you what, though.
I mean, for winning
not
competitions.
Like or being a professional wrestler. Or
right, right.
But yeah. your attachment to it now, because you are a breakout character on Game of Thrones. You're a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And with that, that'll help. Every time the visibility of the sport's raised, we would assume the winning purse is, not that you would ever use a purse, would be raised up a bit as well. So that's a good thing. I think it's a fascinating sport to watch. I think it's just the ultimate in human, you know, achievement. I love when the women do it too. They don't have the competitions as often though, do they? The strongest.
No.
Well, they do, but it's
not as publicized.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems, because it used to be.
Who was it we had? Magnus Vermagnussen?
Magnus Vermagnussen.
In our studio one time. Are you familiar with him?
Magnus where?
Yeah.
Yeah, I train in his gym.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's got the coolest name ever, though. I mean, your name's pretty cool, but Magnus Vermagnussen is one. I mean, that's not a character's name. That's an actual human being's name. It doesn't get more bad.
I don't know, man. Hathor is pretty bad.
Yeah. He's
Hathor.
Yeah, that's, you know, pretty bad.
If I'm going to pronounce Hathor to English, half means ocean and Thor means god, so it's ocean god.
Oh, well,
I'll take that over Magnus.
I don't know. No offense. No offense.
I really
go
ahead. Stop.
The last thing you're going to
be the biggest guy in the room.
How do you say the mountain in Icelandic?
Fjallið.
Fjallið?
Fjallið.
See, I think it's a beautiful language too.
It is.
Especially when as you say, one of the multitude of beautiful Icelandic women speak it sounds. Just it rocks. So.
Hey, you have a mountain in your pants too.
Of course, Nick would ask.
Nick
that
is
question.
Nick goes both ways, and he wants to scale that mountain.
Come I can on. See that he's been looking at me a lot.
Doesn't take yes.
Oh, you should have at least asked me to ask it.
Oh my god!
My guess is that's the case. Yeah. Game of Bones is the movie.
All right. So Casey wrote me a note because
I didn't write that.
Who wrote this?
That's Marissa's handwriting.
Oh, because you have arm wrestled
John Cena. John I almost Cena. Won that one.
Yeah. Hathor, would you take him on in arm wrestling?
Just look at him.
He looks a little scared.
Use your pinky.
Yeah.
Sure.
Use your pinky. All right, Casey, around. Head on over. All take right. on the mountain.
See, then now mind you, this, you know, Case.
I guess he's a professional arm wrestler.
No,
you
he's
can
not.
Tell, right?
Yeah, he's no, Nick trains
no, just I'm gonna just tell all the people who are listening. Arm wrestling is a lot of a technique.
Yeah.
Is not with strength.
That's right.
Right. I love the smile he flashes after he says stuff like that. He's like,
"Look at his arms."
All right, Casey.
Don't hurt.
Right. Yeah. He's just asking to not be hurt.
Yeah, just I'm asking, just be gentle.
Oh, Jesus dude, Christ. Casey. You're going to be eviscerated.
I'm just wondering.
Just massive.
All right, go ahead.
I could get hurt here.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, 1, and go. And it's over.
And it's over.
Yes,
yeah. Wow.
No
wow. No did way. You feel, you saw the spirit of the Viking warrior in Casey.
Not only did he push my arm down, but he crushed my elbow into the counter area here.
Yeah. He's laughing.
Casey, handshake.
You're leaving your hand.
Hey, does Casey remind you of Viking children?
Oh
my God!
Hey, let me ask you, what about your family, Hathor? Do you have any brothers, sisters, or people that are as big as you and your family?
My family is big. Yeah, I have two sisters and a wonderful mom and wonderful dad and one daughter who is 6 years old. She's my heart.
Oh, you have a daughter.
Yes. Nice. You have the tattoo. You guys, so you're
have, I actually have a tattoo for you.
Oh, oh it's beautiful.
Nice. Oh, that's cute.
That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
I guess that with the guys, eventually when she starts dating, she'll never have anybody come to the house.
She won't ever date.
True.
Yes. You're pretty active on Instagram, and we posted a link to your Instagram account up on PrestonandSteve.com, but you posted, like, you were, was it the Taj Mahal that you visited recently?
Did you lift that?
this is in Malaysia.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we want to thank you for coming by here this morning and remind people that they can go and see the mountain. You can see Hathor. See Hathor. He's going to be at the Philadelphia Ren Fair. Good luck for World's Strongest Man.
Yes.
And we hope to see you again sometime.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Let's hear it for Hathor, guys. The mountain. We are going to take a quick break. We'll come back in just a moment. More is on the way. Stay right there.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Our next guest is in the studio. I'm so excited because last year I went to the event he brought to Philadelphia, and as I was telling him off air, was absolutely blown away by the experience.
You were raving about it and basically said after that that if you could buy tickets for the return, you'd buy it right then and there.
And my daughter specifically, who was 7 years old at the time, mind you, fell in love with it. It's called the Nitro Circus Live, and we have the creator, the man behind it all, Travis Pastrana, who is here.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
This morning. We're awesome, man. How are you?
Couldn't be better.
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, we went with... So I have two sons and a daughter. My daughter is the youngest. She was seven at the time. My boys are teenagers. And we weren't sure what she was going to think of the whole thing. And we had to leave early, like, you know, 20 minutes early or so because we had something to get to. And she was so pissed off that we were leaving. I was blown away that this little girl, and she's a girly girl, just could not. She was just blown away. It's the only
as
way
you
I can
were.
Frame it.
As yeah, we yeah. all were.
Oh, my God.
I mean, she's seven, but, you know, I'm in my I was in my 30s, and yeah. I was blown away.
Yeah, usually yeah. it's the parents are coming. They're like, oh, man, we got to go with our, you know, usually sons to go see this action sports, whatever. And then halfway through, it's the parents that are standing up going, this is wild.
I've never seen so much happening at one time in my life because you guys... It's just constant. It's one after another, and you can't, and it just increases the stunts. For those who may not be familiar with Nitro Circus, how would you describe it if nobody knows what you're talking about at all?
Well, Nitro Circus is the best and the best of action sports, man. It's, you know, going 30 feet high in the air. It's jumping 70, 80 feet in distance. You got motorcycles and snowmobiles and four-wheelers all flying side by side. Kind of choreographed, if you will, but we've got everything from guys trying to hit these ramps. I mean, huge ramps on couches, boogie boards, you name it. I mean, there's a lot of crashing, a lot of carnage, and it's built for a pretty ADHD audience.
And it's like I said, it's kind of just like, I mean, it's not like, hey, guy's going to go do one stunt, and then we'll reset, and then we'll get the other one ready to go.
No.
They will send like 20 or 30 people.
Yeah.
Just constant. It's incredible.
And I know the inclination is to think, okay, after years of this and after years of seeing like X Games and stuff like that, you've seen it all. You haven't.
No, you haven't.
No, you haven't. And I was lucky enough. I did something before the show started. I was asked to do a couple of announcing of contests and stuff like that. So I was able to be on the floor with my son.
That's right.
Before it all started. And we were standing next to the ramp, okay? the starting ramp, the big one.
Well,
and
on TV, they look, you know, normal. In person, you're like, what the heck is that?
We were standing at the base of this
suicide.
Thing.
Suicide.
Yeah, we ended up, and it's a great picture of me and my son, you know, him on my shoulders. But we're standing there, and I was messing with him. I go, hey, you have to go down this thing. And you should have seen the fear in his eyes. He's like, no. I'm like, no, I'm just kidding, but... People will go down that, and they're going to go down this, and they're going to go up that, and they're going to go. You know, it was amazing to see.
As you, Travis, as you're putting stuff, and you are the creator and the main dude, the head honcho. Do you have like a Skywalker ranch where you put together this stuff? You know,
pretty much. Actually, not far from here, about an hour and a half. Live in Annapolis, Maryland, and basically we go out and Nitro Circus. You know, they have the X Games. The ramps haven't changed in quite some years. Like it's still the best in the world. But we take those guys and we say, okay, what do you want to do? So just this year, we built a ramp that was 37 feet tall on the takeoff, 78 degrees, so almost vertical. Hitting it at 60 miles an hour, we were able to get one. you know, Josh Sheehan, was able to do a triple backflip on a dirt bike. And 2 days later, we had a guy do a quadruple backflip on a BMX bike. So my house is kind of like the playland, if you will.
Jesus.
Oh God.
Guys, I was a diver when I was a kid, right? I'm just telling you, the most I've ever done is 2.5 flips. And I only did that one time.
You're one of the few divers who used a motorcycle.
Because the second time I did it 2.5, I slapped on my bellies, and I never ever tried it again. But just the idea of that when you're rotating that quickly, I just don't understand how you guys can keep your orientation and land.
You generally can't. And that's the beauty of Nitro Circus, is it's not like a Cirque du Soleil where everything's, oh, and this is big. No, it's these guys pushing themselves. They come on tour because they want to be the best in the world. They want to ride with the best in the world at all this stuff, and they always push themselves. So when you have 40 of the best in the world and the crowd starts getting to it about halftime, everyone is so pumped up and so energetic that, you know, stuff is tried every time a Nitro Circus, every night, something that has never been done before.
Right. By the way, we do have the Budweiser Studio cam on now if you want to take a peek in here with Travis on. It's right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's up
there.
But anyhow, one of the things also is that it keeps rolling. It's not just the stunts and so forth. There's pyrotechnics. There's videos that are being shown. In fact, some of the videos you guys show are a stunt that's about to be done where the person that is trying it out has actually crashed and had an accident before. So they'll show the accident first and say, all right,
a lot of times people they kind of get numb. They're like, does it hurt? And you're like, oh, no, everything in the show is, of course it hurts. Yes. Yeah. So we show them like, you know, I mean, nothing too graphic, but like when a leg bends where it shouldn't, mm-hmm. and, you know, like the foot comes up and kicks them in the butt where, you know, and just to show that, yeah, this is possible.
The bodies should not move in that way.
Right.
They sadly sometimes end up doing that. Now, before we came on, I was talking to you about the 3D movie, which I really did enjoy, and you said it was kind of ratcheted back a little bit for the cinematic aspect of it. But in 3D, as a lot of that action was being caught, you're like, the perspective is here, and you're like, Jesus, mother of Christ. I mean, you can see the heights and the flipping, and from those vantage points, it's pretty staggering. So, and I was sitting on the safety of my couch.
Yeah. Well, we got to do some really cool stuff. We went down to Panama, and we jumped a big wheel, you know, like a Walmart, you know, $100 big plastic rear wheels, from one building that was 63 stories over a 40-foot gap in between the buildings to another building that was 62 stories. And 3D really did it a pretty good job because you could see that you were actually, there was no safety nets, and that's a pretty big drop.
Any plans to do any more films? Or because I know that movie actually did pretty well.
It was actually decent, especially Netflix and so on and so forth later. But everything we've done, we've kind of slowed down. I'm like, look, we need to do something that's like the old school action sports. I mean, you guys were talking about Bam and all the guys that are, you know. So we're doing action figures, actually coming out October 20th.
Really?
It's like the show, just wide open, everything in your face, all, you know, new, just wild stunts. And it's not dumbed down, if you will, because I feel like we underestimate the people that are watching. Like, you don't have to explain that jumping from a 63-story building to a 62-story building is crazy.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
This is something that we can just go bypass, you know?
So, Travis, you've got, at the show, you've got guys on motorcycles. You have BMX bikes. You have people on inline skates, on scooters as well. So things with wheels. But then you have that group that does the really weird stuff, and they'll take, like you said, a couch and so forth. What is that? Does that crew have a name or?
Yeah, they're, well, not really.
Okay.
Nothing you can say on there.
The a-holes.
But they're generally our college wrestlers, football players, guys that didn't quite make it, that didn't really want to get a real job. They're like, look, I'm super durable. What can I do?
Yeah. They have nothing to live for, basically.
No, but they can, they want to travel around. They want to be part of this action. They've generally lived that lifestyle. So in Nitro Circus, you can either do something that no one else in the world can do, or I wouldn't recommend this route. You can do something that no one else in the world is willing to do.
Okay.
And in that case, like, this one guy's like, hey, I want to be part of the show, but I'm not good at anything, and I'm super durable. So, and he's like, well, he's pretty small. So what we did is we put him on the back and on the shoulders of a guy that was riding bicycles. And the guy on the bicycle does a backflip.
Oh my God.
And usually the guy on the back of the bicycle is 6'4", weighs about 200. And if he over rotates, well, the guy basically drops not only from the big jump, goes over rotates, and the big guy, the 6'4", lands on him. And he's never been hurt. So we're like, we love you. This is great.
Well,
then we also put him in the front of a wheel. So he put him in a wheelbarrow.
The same guy.
The same guy. He has like 4 stunts a night. This guy's great. And we put him in the wheelbarrow. And then the guy behind him goes down the 65-foot-tall roll-in.
Wow.
Hits like 40 miles an hour in rollerblades holding the handles of the wheelbarrow. And, you know, he's like 50-50. It's great.
Jesus.
Is wheels going to be part of this, by the way?
We're working with a new, it's like a rocket-powered tow-in system. So Wheels is testing out right now in California to see if he can hang on with his wheelchair and get up to, you know, 40 miles an hour.
We had Wheels in the studio last year, and he totally won us over. He's just the coolest guy. Because, you know, I had asked why he was in a wheelchair. He said, well, I had spina bifida. And I go, what exactly does that mean for those who people, you know, people who may not know what spina bifida is? Spina bifida is, and he just goes, it has to do with like your spine and stuff. That was his explanation of it all. I'm like, I love this
please,
guy.
Please, we're not doctors.
Yeah, exactly.
First time I met Wills, he's such a dry sense of humor, and he's over. They're always like, oh, you'll never make it in action sports. You can't do this. He's like, watch me.
Yeah,
you
know, and he has.
He goes to skate parks, but he was he crashed on this huge roll, and we're like, should we even let him do it? You know, this kid, you know, we can obviously do double backflips on his wheelchair, but this is he's going to hit 40 miles an hour on a standard wheelchair. Like, we can't kill a kid in a wheelchair. That's bad karma all the way around. He goes down and crashes, and we're like, oh no, and he's just laying there. He's like, I'll never walk again. And we're like,
I bet you that comes out often. When you're interviewing or you're someone coming in the show, is there one thing, because you're looking for a different breed of person, someone who's going to push it as far as they can and keep pushing it. But do you ever have someone who wants to come on board the show that's basically, this guy's looking to kill himself? Like, you know, someone appears so deranged. Or does that level even exist?
No. Well, the thing is, everyone says you got to be crazy to be on Nitro Circus, but actually, you have to be really calculated to get good enough,
right,
to do something. If you're crazy, you're just going to be injured all the time.
Right.
So, and everyone's like, "Oh, how do we figure out? Like, how do we get to Nitro Circus?" All parents are always, "Oh, my son's really good." Dude, if you're the best in the world at what you do, or you're doing something that no one else is doing, you're pushing the envelope. But the biggest thing is passion, because there's a lot of great athletes out there. But when it comes down to it, Nitro Circus is a show. It's about the fans in the stands. And if you can get those guys on their feet, you know, whatever you do, you got to be passionate about it.
It's good. So much fun, gang. We're talking to Travis Pastrana. If you just tune in, Travis, I've had a number of texts coming up asking me to ask you about jumping out of a plane with no chute.
It was kind of pass or fail. I was always better at those tests.
What is this? I'm not familiar. What happened?
I like to call it a product test. You know, they say Red Bull gives you wings. So I jumped out of a plane. And as it turns out, it was kind of more like Toy Story. It just helps you fall with style. I needed my buddy to come down. No way to put this correctly, but as he mounted.
Yes.
You know, it was
as he had to.
Right. Yeah. It latched on. It was a very, very good feeling. Yes.
You had to, because you figured that was your best chance at not dying.
Right. Yeah.
So what? I'm not familiar. What happens? So he jumps out and holds on to you and pulls his chute, or what?
So basically, I jumped out. I had board shorts on, socks. That was it. You know, kind of like that. That song, Skydive Naked, from an airplane, Motley Crue. I always wanted to do that. Ever since seeing, if Johnny Utah could do it in Point Break, I mean, really, how hard could it be?
Right. And when did they pull the chute? They pulled the chute just how? What was the altitude in that?
No, I pulled a little higher.
A little higher?
Yeah. Old Swayze. Yeah.
How high up were you?
The thing was, it was really cold. It didn't seem cold there. But, you know, we were kind of overloaded in the plane, so we had camera equipment and stuff. So it took us like 45 minutes to get to 10,000. We were supposed to get to 12, and I was like, you know what? We're good enough, guys. So then I did a couple flips. And
I'm nothing like you, but I have done skydiving. Preston, in case you have as well. And it didn't occur to me, but it should have, I guess. But when you get to 12,000 feet, it is cold. You know, and it was on my birthday. It was July 20th, so I expected it to be warm up there. You're struck by how cold it is when you jump out of the plane.
Yeah, I figured it was probably more important to, I should have brought more clothes. I was just, we didn't really think this through that well.
Yeah, you're making a statement.
Now, as Nick has said, I've done the tandem jump before, and when you, I've done it twice, and when you pull the chute, it yanks the ever living hell out of you. I mean, it's not a little tug.
Especially your crotch.
It throws you off. Yeah. Like, what just happened? So anytime in any movie, a la Point Break or Kingsman: The Secret Service, where there's somebody hanging on to the guy with the chute,
we call it a Mr. Bill. It's got a name.
A Mr. Bill?
Yes.
I've never believed that could actually be possible because of how hard you get yanked when the chute opens.
No, well, the thing is, you can actually pack the parachute to open really slow, but that all depends on aerodynamics. So if you're tumbling at all, which is really difficult, when you have two people, you drop much, much faster. So you're dropping at 180 instead of 120, which makes it open harder.
You have the two guys with you. So you had one guy. If the one guy had not been able to keep the grip, I assume the other guy's your backup.
No, I actually just had one guy that had
just
a shoot.
Just one guy to shoot. All
but
right.
The thing is, you start dropping really fast. So that one guy was actually trying to slow me down as much as possible right. and basically keep me balanced while we got a really good hold.
All right, so quick question. There are people, Preston, how much did you have to wrestle with the notion of stepping out with a tandem jump?
I mean, I was terrified.
All right, so
I was absolutely terrified.
Do you not feel anything as you're stepping out of a plane sans chute?
You know what scared me the most? Matt Hoffman, one of my heroes, always said, he goes, man, every time I'm up someplace really high, I just want to jump. I'm like, man, you're actually crazy. You should get that, like, look, checked out.
Right, yeah.
And I jumped out of the plane, you know, just in board shorts, and I scared myself because I'm like, this feels totally normal.
Wow. Yeah, you were good with it.
All right, so you're in a meeting, and this gets greenlit. I can jump out of a plane.
It does not get greenlit.
Yeah. No, you did this without any...
No, I actually paid... I mean... I had to get military guys. No one would do it. Even Red Bull, who's all into everything, they're like, look, you're not a professional. I mean, with all due respect, yeah. you suck at jumping out of a plane. Like, we're, you know, you're not the best in the world at this. So this didn't get greenlit. I had to go down. I went down to Puerto Rico, which unfortunately, as my geography wasn't the greatest, is still a U.S. territory and
yeah.
still got all the same fines and everything that
right,
I normally
right,
would
yeah.
got here. But no, so I basically said, I'm going to do this. And I found a bunch of military guys who were like, well, if we lose our skydive license, we can still do halo jumps, so we don't really care.
Right, yeah.
And I figured, you know, never leave a man behind. I was like, these are my guys.
Well, wow, was it the dude who did the from the suborbital jump? That was through Red Bull.
Felix
that was
Red Bull.
Yeah. Very good name pull. Yeah, yeah, Felix is awesome. Actually, but Felix, for him, some of the gnarlier stuff that he's done has actually been the wingsuit stuff.
Yeah. About you? What about you with that? I mean, because that
my wife won't let me.
Really?
She said it's too dangerous.
How relatively speaking is that any worse than jumping out of a plane without a chute on?
I didn't know her then.
So what do you do? What I mean, from where did you start?
Started motorcycles was my biggest background. My mom raced motorcycles. My dad raced motorcycles. We went on camping trips every weekend. It's what we did as a family. I have, you know, six uncles. I was the run of the family though, man. My uncle was quarterback at Denver Broncos. I had two cousins that almost qualified for the Olympics. And like,
I'm sorry. He was a quarterback for the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, it was right. It was 69-70 right when it switched from AFL, NFL. Mm-hmm. His claim to fame was he got knocked out by Bubba Smith. The big guy on
wow.
from Police Academy.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Wow.
All right, so motorcycles, then to...
Motorcycles, and then every time I got hurt, you broke a wrist, you broke an ankle, you could still drive go-karts and stuff. So I started racing, go-karts and cars kind of as fun things. I was hurt all the time. And then X Games came around, and we couldn't afford... I mean, motocross is an expensive sport. We had... My dad is a construction worker. All my uncles, they have a construction company, but real small stuff, so...
You got to lug that stuff around. You got to maintain the equipment. You got to get the equipment.
Yeah, so they would basically all take pay cuts to get me to, like, the national championships just to... But I couldn't make money until I turned pro. So we went out and we did X Games as a way to be like, okay, well, at least we can afford to get you to the races if you do this, kind of as a this is, these tricks, shenanigans are never going to get you anywhere in life, but we'll do it.
And they have.
And and then all of a sudden it blew up and it was bigger than racing. And, we were able to basically take it from there.
With the X Games, they were on fire for a while, and there was a tremendous amount of folks. I know, it's still the deal. Have they hit a stasis, or are they, have they come down a bit in popularity? What's the status of the X Games?
The really interesting thing for us in X Games is freestyle was all about freedom. It's about style. It's about culture. Right. It's about, all the old videos, like you said, with Bam and the Crush Demons of Dirt and all this stuff just showed this lifestyle that was just free. And then you take it, and to monetize it, you have to be able to put limits on it. You have to be able to put rules on it. Mm. Well, then it became like gymnastics. And sorry, no kid that's getting up growing on a skateboard, no offense, like gymnastics is a great sport. It's a very tough sport. But now there's coaches, there's all kind of stuff. And everything that made this ADHD audience want to go out and just be by themselves. And now all of a sudden their parents are like, here, let's get a coach.
Right.
So it took a little bit of that out. But
sucked the life out of it.
But that's... we need that, but we also need Nitro Circus, guys that are just like, we don't care if you point your toes. We don't care. We're like, if you lay a trick that's never been done, if you try it, we're going to give you a high five.
Yeah. I love how mainstream the extreme sports has become, because, it wasn't too long ago where there was the discussion on whether or not skateboarding or BMXing or any of that was a sport.
Yeah.
And
or before snowboarding was in the Olympics, things like that.
And I always said, like, take any quarterback, you know, professional quarterback and put him on a skateboard. And you tell me, you know, here's one, a world-class athlete, and tell me if they can do anything that these guys can
Wait,
do.
Your wife is a skateboarder?
Yeah, my wife's a skateboarder.
Yeah.
She won her first X Games gold medal set at 15.
Wow.
Or 14. No, sorry. She beat me. That's right.
Was it back in, was it like 2000, the X Games were here in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Remember down?
Yeah.
I went to that. It was crazy.
2001. Yeah. But that was, you know, that was around that time when freestyle motocross was just first getting in. I mean, you had Dave Mirra just doing the double backflip. I mean, now Jolene Van Voot on Nitro, she... There's girls doing the tricks that were just thought such. I mean, not that that sounded.
Yeah.
Awkward.
I know what you're saying, though. Yeah.
I'm sorry. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, everything has evolved so far, and it's awesome. But we need to keep modifying the jumps and the ramps and keep having this freedom to go out there. Yeah.
I need to ask you. You know, you had mentioned the ramp, the 37 foot tall ramp with a 78 degree ramp at the end of it. When you guys, right before you go up, I mean, you said that's almost vertical. And if you're doing 60 miles an hour, at that moment, when you make that turn to go up, how many G's are you pulling? It's got to be a lot.
Don't have a G monitor, but that was the interesting thing. Because we had an Olympic snowboarder that's a good motocross rider. He came out and he's like, I want to hit it. We're like, all right. Because we had, at this point, we had a bag landing. So we had a really big airbag. Yeah. Well, he hits it, and his legs, I mean, this is a pretty strong guy, completely compressed. And as he sat down, it just bounced him even, you know, like when you seat bounce a jump, I don't know if anyone rides motorcycles, but you get bounced even higher up. Yeah. So he didn't make the distance. So he jumps off of the motorcycle, and he's going hard right. He actually kicks a tree. We have footage of this. So it's go to nitrocircus.com. We'll see it in action figures. Yeah. But he jumps off the motorcycle to make the distance, jumps off of a tree, to get back to the side.
So he corrects his
twice,
trajectory?
Twice. Off the motorcycle, he pushed to the tree, off the tree. And this is, you know, this is 80, this it's 80 feet in the air. This is right before the Olympics. Thank goodness. Because, I mean, someone would have been really upset for that.
It's an eight-story building, you know.
If I recall.
And he made it.
Was it in your backyard where somebody, you had a foam pit and somebody was doing a motorcycle? Was that you?
No. I've never missed my foam pit, but a really fat friend, Tommy. He had so much, he just went too far.
Uh-huh.
He tried his GSXR, like a street bike. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm going to do a backflip. Well, he grabbed a handful, and it just, again, the seat bounce thing, catapulted him straight in the air. He was, you know, probably 40 feet above the ground and just landed flat on his back.
Wait, when your bike, if it's a motorcycle, you'll try that on a foam pit first? Or
We start either foam pits or airbags. Now we got bag landings. It's just
how do you
cool.
get a how do you get a motorcycle out of a foam pit? You got
a crane.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow.
It's a full, like, it's a process.
So you have all the tech and all this stuff that and you're, I mean, do you have any understanding of mathematics and all that stuff as well? Because is there a holy grail in ramp height? Is there some, you know, you just keep upping it by 10 feet, or will there be a point where you top out?
Yeah, of course, but it evolves depending on the tricks that you want to do.
Yeah.
Red Bull was awesome with the New Year's No Limits. They actually brought smart people in. It was amazing. They're like, yeah, you should go this distance, this speed. Yeah. They can calculate it pretty quick. Well, there was a 10-mile-an-hour headwind after lunch. Hit it again. We had a world record car jump set at like 270 feet.
Right.
So we're doing the last practice jump. And 10-mile-an-hour headwind, didn't think much of it. Well, the car affects much differently than a motorcycle. Motorcycle literally cuts through it. Car does not. Landed short, bounced. I mean, this is a $500,000 car. End for end down the back. I'm laying there half concussed, and the physicist, like, you know, mathematician's like, yeah, that's pretty much what we thought was going to happen. I was like, well, thanks for the information. Yeah. That was a great 10 minutes ago.
There's a place in Ohio called Ohio Dreams. I don't know if you've ever – it's just this giant water slide that that people go and do flips and stuff off of.
It's awesome, yeah.
You've done it.
Well, no, we went to the Olympic, the ski park, and we did all kinds of rafts and stuff off of that.
Wow. Sweet. All right. Well, listen, I cannot more highly recommend Nitro Circus Live. I did it last year. Was pleasantly surprised, blown away. We talked about it for weeks, and I took a little video and showing everybody, dude, look what we went to. This is amazing. Nitro Circus Live. Great to have you here this morning.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate y'all. Yeah.
Travis Pastrana, guys. We're gonna take a break. We'll come back in a second. We'll be right back.
Listen to all the WMMR podcasts as well as a live stream on your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, open MMR.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car.
Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
An Augusta, Georgia woman was arrested after she attacked her boyfriend for refusing to have sex with her.
Show me the picture of this
woman.
Well,
why wouldn't anyone want to have sex with this beauty?
Oh, good Lord.
What happened to her mouth?
Look at her mouth.
I think she's Rat Girl.
I think she
looks disgusting.
To give the listening audience at home an idea of what this woman looks like, put a wig on Bruce Dern and punch him in the mouth.
No.
He's prettier.
That's too hot.
I saw this woman. Steve, you heard me react this morning when I saw this short. I'm like, butt ugly is the only thing that comes to my mind.
Is that what you were talking about?
Yes.
When you said this woman is butt ugly?
Yeah, no, she looks like, as my father used to say, a smashed ass.
Tabitha Lee Groom.
I mean, she's got a grill that you would only associate with like a possum.
Yeah. She came home around 1:30 in the evening.
Why don't you want to make love?
On June 24th, and attacked her boyfriend while he was sitting on the couch.
I'm feeling horny.
She said she was angry that he refused her advances earlier that day, so she scratched him on the face, head, and neck.
Do me a favor, sweetie. Let me just go blind myself. I'll be right back.
And then she bit him on the arm, which spread God only knows how many diseases.
I don't know where that mouth's been.
He ran into the bathroom, called 911. When deputies responded to the house,
Did they send animal control?
Grooms would not give her name at first and threatened to run over a deputy with a baby stroller. She admitted that she had been drinking, by the way.
Hmm.
Grooms also punched her 66-year-old mother in the eye during the ordeal.
I like how she has the ombre going, though.
She was arrested.
She had time to get her hair done.
Yeah.
She was arrested and charged with simple battery family violence.
If I was a dentist, that would be my...
Career.
My pro bono work. I would say, come here. I'm going to help you. I'm going to fix... whatever that mess is on the inside of your mouth.
I'm closing my practice. I have one patient now. Yeah. Forever.
Forever. This story is out of the Daily News, and this is staff writer Stephanie Farr wrote this story, and I've just got to give her credit because she uses a few little euphemisms in this. A Delaware County man has filed a federal lawsuit claiming that the cops who arrested him for public drunkenness in 2012 were real ball busters because they tased his testicles while he was handcuffed in the back of a police cruiser.
Oh, my balls!
In the suit, Cain Brown of Glen Olden claims that the lasting effects of the tase to his testes are driving him nuts. But an attorney for one of the defendant officers says the claim is poppycock.
Uh-huh.
And that the officer tased Brown in his thigh, not his gonads. Brown is seeking more than $1 million for the damages he claims to have suffered to his family jewels.
Penis dongschlong.
These.
Give up.
The suit, which was filed in October, is scheduled for a settlement conference next month, according to court records.
So, where was he at? The Red Lantern, by any chance? Or?
It doesn't say.
Doesn't? Okay.
Why?
I was just wondering. He was from Glen Olden. I was just wondering, what bar was he at for public drunk? Because I know Delco like the back of his nuts.
You know the back of his nuts.
Yeah.
Very well.
Very well.
When you have them draped across your forehead,
you're pretty... You get pretty familiar.
I know that.
I'm still thinking.
I know that mushroom.
I'm still thinking about the teeth.
They're nasty. A South Carolina couple forced their teenage daughter to live in the woods because she snacked on a Pop-Tart without their permission.
You get out and live in the woods now. Really?
Yeah.
James and Crystal Diggers were arrested on child neglect charges after deputies found the 14-year-old... camping alone on Friday.
Can you go back to the other story, Preston?
Jesus
real quick.
Christ.
I grabbed the article from you. First paragraph.
The incident in question began when police were called to a fight at the Red Lantern Tavern in Glen Olden.
There you go.
About 2 a.m.
He got it.
Right.
Wait, did he say that originally?
He did. He was wondering. Casey can pretty much, if there's an area in Delco where there's a bar fight has erupted, he can pick the bar.
Yeah.
Especially wherever the back of that guy's nutsack
was. Yeah, he knows that
That's
too.
Right. Yeah. Smells like the back of that.
That smells like the back of your nuts.
Delco.
Delco.
All right, now back to the other story now. Delco. With the Pop-Tart wilderness girl.
Yeah, James and Crystal Diggers were arrested on child neglect charges after deputies found their 14-year-old camping alone Friday, 2 days into
her... the Pop-Tart!
...into her week-long punishment.
You go live in the woods now.
The girl was sent to a tent about a quarter mile from her home, and her parents gave her just a flashlight, a single roll of toilet paper, a whistle... and a watch for...
I'll teach you to eat breakfast pastries.
The seven-day campout. The forest is known for its wild hog population, too.
You can live on a diet of wild hog.
The girl was told to meet someone at a fence at a specific time each day to get food. If she didn't show up at the right time, she wouldn't eat, her parents allegedly told her.
The fence man with the food will be around there noon to 1 o'clock.
Thunderstorms battered the county Thursday night, the first night of the camping sentence. The girl slept in the tent during the downpour. The reason for the bizarre campout, because the girl ate a Pop-Tart without permission, the couple told investigators. And this isn't the first time that James and Crystal have banished their daughter from their home. Last month, she was forbidden from entering the house between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. as another form of punishment. They have five children. The girl's in custody of South Carolina Department of Social Services, and her four siblings are now living...
We put our youngest boy down for eating a ring ding.
With their grandparents.
Put him down?
And then...
Good for nothing.
Finally, let's... Well, you know what? I kind of partially told the story of the guy with the selfie stick, so why don't I get to that?
All right.
Yeah, a man who was struck and killed by lightning is reported to have been hit by the bolt because he was carrying a selfie stick.
So was he using it at the time, or he just simply had it on him?
Not really sure. Two men died and a further two were injured in Brecon Beacons mountain range.
Brecon Beacons.
Brecon Beacon.
Welcome to Brecon Beacons. My name's Brett Boffman.
On Sunday.
That's a blinking beacon.
It's a blinking blinking.
In separate incidents where when a thunderstorm broke out on it. Sources close to the rescue teams claim one of the dead men may have been struck because he was carrying a selfie stick. And yeah, Steve, I don't know if he was taking photos with it at the time or not. Mark Jones from Brecon Beacons Mountain Rescue.
That's Bert Baffle at Brecon Beacons Mountain.
Said that one of the victims was reached by a doctor within 25 minutes because the rescue team was already out on the range on a training exercise.
When you were out, when you were out in Wyoming, how far were you from the closest hospital where something happened?
Something did happen. Somebody broke their leg before we got there. The closest hospital would have been in Jackson, probably.
So about an hour?
An hour and 45 minutes.
Wow. Hour 45.
Yeah. So you'd have to airlift. If somebody was serious, you'd have to airlift.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's wild.
Yep.
It's not like Brecon Beacon.
No, Brecon Beacon's a little more accessible. It only took them 25 minutes. The two men who died were hit in separate lightning strikes on the mountain while the other two men were hospitalized with their injuries. And there you go. That is what I have for you. In the Bizarre File, we'll be right back.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Disturbed. No more Revivalists. Motionless and White.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, Azalea Banks blasted the MTV VMAs after receiving no nomination, saying that America hates opinionated black women. Banks later had to retract the statement after learning it's actually her specifically that America hates.
Hey!
Kim Kardashian is sharing a series of makeup-free photos from a recent Vogue Spain shoot saying the true beauty is inside. In fact, Kim says you can actually see some of that inside if you watch her sex tape.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome.
And finally, the Scientology Center in Hollywood is running a summer movie night presentation of Top Gun to honor its highest profile member, Tom Cruise.
Cruz says PCs and SCs will be the SFs for the night, or in layman's terms, popcorn and snow caps will be the snack food.
Oh.
That's your Hollywood trash.
Next guest is a comedian. He's an author. He's a TV guy. He's a movie guy. He's done all kinds of stuff and helps ladies out all over this country. And we have an example of that here in just a moment. And not just ladies. Let's welcome Gregory Barrett to the program. How you doing, Greg?
Yeah, very good. Very
excellent.
Good.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. So, did I get all that right? I'm going to make sure I gave you all your accolades correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you did. There was too many.
Okay, sorry.
There's too many.
Which one should be eliminated?
All of them. Stand-up comedian is what I do.
Stand-up comedian.
That's my main gig.
Yeah.
But I did that for 15 years before I stumbled into the relationship book thing.
Yeah, let me roll down the reason I said the author and all these other things is because
I wrote the Da Vinci Code.
He wrote that.
A lot of people know.
Damn, that was good.
Thank you. And then I just finished 50 Shades of... So I write a lot of stuff for women.
You use pseudonyms then.
I do. Okay, I use a lot of ladies' names.
Mm-hmm. No, he's just not that into you.
That's right. I wrote that.
Was absolutely huge. Right when it came out, it took off, man.
Yeah, it did very well, thanks to Oprah.
Well, we were talking about when was the last time you were here, right before we went on air. And I went back and scrolled through our website. And I think you've been here since then, but... the last entry that I put on the website to promote you, Greg, was Greg is a great comedian and has a band, The Reigning Monarchs. And then it says, check out their MySpace. So that was.
Are you serious?
Check out their MySpace.
That was 2009. So maybe that was the first time you were here.
Yeah, we had a pretty great MySpace page. You can still go over there. MySpace is just a tenement building. People buy crack there and you can hear gunshots. It's very sad. You go there, it's just all burned out.
Wasn't Justin Bieber trying to make a bid to get that back up and running and make it a music site? I guess it now is more a sort of a music.
I don't know what it is. We got conned into rejoining a little while ago.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Yeah, it just failed.
Does the band still exist though?
Yeah, the band is doing very well. Oh, okay. Yeah, the band's doing very, very well.
You reinvigorated.
And now I've gone solo from the band.
Okay.
Because the King sweater. Well, when I in 1985 I went to Japan. This is a quick story. I went to Japan to play rockabilly and expat bars as the King swinger.
That was my name.
And when I got there, all the posters said the King sweater. So I've re.
That is awesome.
I brought that name back, and I perform
the King sweater.
The King sweater.
Sweater.
Is that cool to have a kind of a stage name, a stage persona?
I would rather just be the King sweater. Or Saint Vincent. Yeah, I like a stage name. That's Greg cool. Barrett's all right. Barrett's not a great show business name. Yeah.
No.
Difficult.
Well, listen, I want to make sure
I should have changed it to Dane Cook when I had the chance. That's 8 letters, man. That happens.
You sort of look cookish. You get confused.
Dane Cook's a name that you would give that guy a gig without even hearing any of it. It's like Dane Cook seems like he should be here tomorrow night. Why not? 8 letters. Have him in.
It worked for him.
Yeah. Well, I want to introduce you to one of our favorite people. She helps out with us in so many ways. She's been a calendar girl of ours, and she has helped us out with our President Steve Totally Office calendars that we have every year. But she made it a point to be here this morning to meet you because you've helped her. This is Angela Perfetto, who we welcome, the lovely Angela.
Hi.
And Angela, why was Greg so important to you?
Because he helped me get through my first heartbreak when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I read the book, and it said, you know, if the guy likes you, he will call you. He will make it a point to see you. No matter what. And if he doesn't like you, he's not going to do it. So it's like, stop trying to chase these guys down because if he likes you, he will make it a point to see you. So I was like, that is so right.
Which, by the way, almost any dude in this room could have told you that.
Yeah.
I know. Every single dude in this room already knew that years ago. But we
didn't want to turn off any girls that we might actually get laid with by saying that.
Right. Yeah. And I was already married when I said it. So it was time.
You were clear.
I was in the clear.
It was good old-fashioned, just plain, straight-up advice.
It just came from me actually giving a girl at work the same advice. That's how it started. When I was a consultant on Sex and the City, and one of the girls was seeing a guy that didn't want to sleep with her, and I thought, well, that's problematic.
Yeah.
If you don't want to sleep with the girl, maybe you don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you're seeing a guy and he's married to somebody else, bad choice.
Just bad
for dating.
It is!
And that's basically what the book was meant to be. Very funny, like that. Very just sort of light. You know what I mean? Like, basic, because I'm not a therapist or anything, certainly. And I wouldn't take advice from a guy with blue hair and a scarf on indoors.
But that's only
because I'm 50 and I didn't feel like ironing my neck. The point is...
But you get these encounters with the people like Angela all the time now, right?
Yeah, I have for a long time. It's very nice. I was walking with I was in Chicago and I was with the owner of the club and we were walking down the street and a girl walked up and was like teary-eyed and said, oh my God, you changed my life. And the guy said, you know, that's never happened to me with any other comic I've been with. And I go, yeah, but I also just wish he'd come up and say, you're so funny. I'm happy to save your life, but man,
you are so funny.
You are so funny.
No, but I, you know, it helped me out, help my friends out as well that, you know, have not read the book. And I always say you could be the prettiest girl or you can have the best job, make money, like sports. But if you don't have that connection with someone, it's not going to work out.
Right.
Like, you can have a connection with a guy, but if a guy doesn't have the same thing back, it's not going to work out. So move on. He's not the only guy in the world.
No, there's
a lot
of
them. Go out and find another one.
Yep, yeah. there's at least eight other guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's at least eight other men.
You know, the humor, though, you talk about being funny, and the humor of that source material comes from the overtly candid nature of what you were saying. A lot of times that's just cutting to the chase. It just catches people, and they're like, yeah, exactly, because I know a number of women who read the book, and you had your talk show for a while as well, which you know, ministering to women likewise, and just general issues. What was your experience with that, doing the talk show?
I didn't like that part of it. Yeah. I like writing a book and letting it lay there. I didn't like going on. I don't want to stand on point and tell people what to do with their lives.
Sure.
I didn't enjoy that at all.
Huh.
I just wanted, but that was the only TV show I was being offered. So I was like, well, maybe I could turn it into something. But then you end up just counseling people. I'm like, that's not what I got into this to do.
Was that an Oprah production?
No, which is probably why it failed.
Yeah.
You know, and also I was on it. But the, so unfair to myself.
Well, what did that success do for you and do to you?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, we still write books. We did it at a life class last year. We wrote it. We're in the middle of writing a book right now called How to Keep Your Marriage from Sucking.
Yeah.
From two people whose marriage has sucked at times, for real. But it made it stand up a little bit. It sort of messed up it didn't mess it up. It just, a lot of people would come out to see me do stand up expecting to, you know, hear relationship stuff. And I've never done relationship stuff. I've always just talked about being old and playing in bands and, you know, just whatever is on my plate at the moment. You know what I mean? And if a relationship thing wandered into my act, it was genuine, but it was never, I wasn't like, let's all have cosmos and beat on guys. Like, I, you know.
Girls. Yeah. Let's
right.
dish. Yeah. No,
right.
I was familiar with your stuff and I knew that it's that dichotomy because your stand up is your stand up and this is a different part of your career. But when you get branded, it's hard to shake that.
In the old days, I think now because of Twitter and because of all the social media, you can have four careers going at once and people get it. You know, I play in a band now. I still write books. I do stand up. People come out. They know I had a podcast for a little while. Like, people get what you're into, but that's, you know, because, you know, they have the opportunity to.
Does King Sweater make his way into your stand-up occasionally?
I talk about the King Sweater a little bit. It's funny that I went there and had a mohawk and used to spray paint it silver because I didn't realize you could dye it, and then I had to go to the hospital because I closed all the... spray painted it. Yeah,
dude.
Japanese spray paint, and then closed all the pores on my head, and then had to be rushed to the hospital because I had infected my skull.
Did you ever see Goldfinger? You know, the classic?
Yes, exactly. I half killed myself. I didn't go all the way, but I did. And they're like, what do you, you know, you can dye your, you know,
dude,
I'm not a bright, I'm not a genius in a lot of, I could have used your help at that point. We could have been a team.
Well, Bond explains in Goldfinger that Goldfinger kills one of the women by covering her in gold paint, and that dancers will do the body paint, but they leave a patch open in the lower back so the skin can breathe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you were starting to basically kill yourself.
I wish somebody would close the hole on the Blue Men Group. Why would I say that? I don't have anything wrong with the Blue Men Group. Why do I want one of those guys to die? It just seemed like a funny thing to say.
By the way, Angela is a hairstylist, and she could color your hair. I'm sure you would.
I might go lavender this weekend.
Okay.
I don't know about that.
So, curious thing about, I'm fascinated with Japanese culture. Would love to go to Japan. The length of the trip is the prohibitive.
But this was in the 80s, so I barely remember it.
Oh, really?
This was in the 80s.
Because there are certain things over there.
I do a one-man show about it, and the show starts off, people rarely keep the promises that they make on cocaine. And so, and I had said one night at a Go-Go's concert, I'm going to go to Japan and have big hair, which was the plan, not even to play music.
Then,
you know, so that was years ago. And that's actually that's the Wikipedia description of the 80s was, I was at the Go-Go's on cocaine.
Nice. That's funny. Because they do embrace weird Western culture things that they just run like You know, there are certain things that they take from us that they just run with.
And they do it better.
Yeah, yeah.
They turn it around. Like, if you look at the Stray Cats, for instance, the Stray Cats are a Japanese version of an American rockabilly band. That's what the Japanese would have done with it. Huge hair, tattoos, makeup. Right. Like, they just take it. They make it more fun because they're Japanese. They're cool. Adorable.
Hey, did you almost kind of sort of have a song that was on the Pretty in Pink soundtrack?
That's the song Cakebox was on the soundtrack and then taken off when they changed the end of the movie, which, as you know, they changed the ending of the movie. Originally, she ends up with Ducky.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't like the ending. He didn't even, and so they changed the ending and they took
and
the
they
song
took
off.
The song
it was
out.
Only on for 2 weeks, but that was happening when I was in Japan. So part of me thinks, did it really?
Cause
it really
right.
Did that really happen?
Sure. What was it, the paint?
Yeah. But the song's called Cakebox, and I get the rights back to it this year, which I did. I sold the rights to the song and the name The King Sweater and the pomade, which I made, to a Japanese cosmetics company, and then they hired someone else to be the King Sweater, and that was the end of it. I got fired from my own name, and I
can't
home.
Even follow all of that.
I know. Who can?
The pomade. So, you made pomade?
Yeah, I made my own pomade because I stopped spray painting my hair. I'm not a bright look. I need to make my own pomade.
How do you make pomade?
Yeah. Beeswax and some other stuff. I can't remember. I learned, like, somebody there showed me how to do it, but it was like a beeswax and I don't know, some oils.
Some stuff.
So it's your patented method of making pomade, and you will then now...
I get the rights back to
you
that.
You get it back.
Yeah,
so
I don't know that anyone's going to be interested, but I'll have that back, and then I'll get the song Cakebox back. Which
do you
is
stand
it.
To make any decent money off
nobody's
that?
Gonna,
nothing.
No,
okay.
Nobody's
going to.
He doesn't even remember how to make it.
I mean, unless some people get excited about it and want to suddenly wear silver pomade and listen to a song that sounds like a bad Billy Idol outtake.
So you're
there's
saying...
a song called Cakebox about liking a... When I went, I had to... I went there to just be the Japanese Link Ray. I just wanted to play instrumentals. And they're like, you can't go there and not have songs. So I did some covers, and I wrote a song called Cakebox because I thought, why not have an original? And it's literally about seeing a cakebox and wanting to have what's inside of it and then sharing it with somebody. I'm not Dylan. I never said I was Bob Dylan.
However, did you learn a big lesson from this whole thing of selling everything away? Mm. And then, I mean, even...
Well, learn Japanese, okay. Because when you sign a Japanese contract, you should know what it says. And, you know, I was young. I needed the money to go home and then start this other career.
Do you know who Megan
Trainor
is?
I've always been like... I've always... Say it again.
Do you know who Megan Trainor is?
No.
She's the All About That Bass Girl.
Oh, yeah, okay. I know who that is.
All right, so,
my sisters, my daughters. I shouldn't call them my sisters. I'm not good at family. I forget who everybody is. I forget the rules all the time. I need to grow up.
Yeah.
I really need to grow up. Maybe I shouldn't be dyeing my hair, painting my fingernails at 52.
What does your wife say? Is she like, oh, my God, what are
you
doing?
Yeah, she just puts up with it.
Yeah. By the way, you need a new coat of nail polish.
This needs to come off and stay off. This was Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyway, yeah. Megan Trainor, she's the All About That Bass Girl. She writes a song, performs it, and then some record company wants to come in and buy it from her.
Right.
So that, like, a Rihanna or somebody could do it. And she could have made a ton of money off of that, but then she said, now I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
And now she's
made a ton of money.
She made a ton of money.
Yeah, she's Macklemore.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it. You know, own the rights to it. You can borrow it. You can loan it to him. I sold the rights to He's Just Not That Into You to New Line to make a movie out of.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what they do. And that's why they make it whatever they want, because now they own it for a while. You said they can have it.
Were you ever offered a sitcom?
Oh, yeah. I've had a few development deals for sitcoms.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't like acting. It's not my...
Is that your thing?
I just don't get... Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah. I'd prefer to... This year I worked on a show for Oxygen and I learned how to direct, and that's what I want to do next is...
Really?
Okay. Direct.
When the movie was made, was that a good windfall for you? I mean...
Yeah, it was good. It was great. Yeah. And then they put me in the film, which is the most unwarranted cameo in the history of filmmaking. It's just... It sticks out like the sorest of thumbs.
It's a beautiful
cast. It's a great cast.
Yeah,
there's
no
reason for me to be amongst that crowd. I don't need to mess up the Bradley Cooper next to the Justin Long next to the... I mean,
stop,
come on,
Scarlett
Johansson.
Yeah, in the pool. Yeah.
It was that cast is insane. The movie did okay, but when you look at the cast and how far everyone in the cast has come...
Yeah.
And Kevin Connolly's in there. It's good.
Yeah. No, that's cool. It's a good step off. When you were starting in comedy, you were... you lived with David Cross for a while?
Cross and I were roommates, yeah. When he had just started doing Mr. Show.
Hilarious guy, but he seems like he might be a bit high strung.
Yeah. No, he's just, you know, he's an antagonist.
Is he? Yeah.
But a great roommate.
Yeah, okay.
Really. Like, for a guy who's a bit of an anarchist, he's like super neat. neat. And
is he?
Like, yeah, a little OCD.
The neat anarchist.
Neat, yeah, he's a neat anarchist. He's a tidy punk is what I call him. I love tidy punks. My favorite thing about punk rock is when you go to a punk rock store and there's a big Anarchy A on the door and then it's right next to the hours of operation.
Right? Yes.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
No rules!
But we open at 9, and on Sundays we open at 11. And you can't bring your drinks in here. What?
Right. Yeah, you can't even make a mess.
That's not punk.
So are you one of these hardcore vinyl guys? Are you a vinyl snob?
No, because I sold all my vinyl in the 80s because I had a drug problem. So I wish, I love it. I'm down with it. I like that people buy it, but the kids my daughter's age are buying cassettes now. So I'm lost. I don't know what anyone's doing anymore.
Cassettes are now trendy. You know what
else? Well, I like the idea that they've gone to, like, if you want an album, to me, that's like, you know what? This is a better experience musically. I think we all kind of agree. Right, albums are warm and different, and it's a different experience. If you want a cassette, now that's like buying Pabst Blue Ribbon. You're just trying to buy something bad because you think it's cool.
That's it. That's
right?
You're dead on,
right? Hipsters drinking Pabst. When I was a kid, people, you'd go, no, I'm not, I don't want to get that drunk. Like, I don't need that hot. I don't need, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Pabst was a beer you didn't drink, and now it's like, yeah, man, it's cool.
Well, but talking hang about- on. Pabst has won gold medals at the beer.
The
Great American Beer Festival. This is a, you know, a blindfolded taste test by professionals.
Look, the dudes in the parking lot where I went to high school said no. Like, I don't know. I don't need professionals.
They were unimpressed.
Yeah.
We're just talking about pop culture influencing sales and things like that. Part of the reason why there's a spike in cassette sales was Guardians of the Galaxy, and that became a popular soundtrack.
Oh, I love that movie.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, I love
Bradley
that movie.
Bradley Cooper's in that, too, yeah.
Yeah, of course Bradley Cooper's in that. Bradley Cooper's in everything. Oh, are you happy, Bradley? And you want to know what else? I know him a little bit. Also nice. Go to hell.
Yeah, and speaks French.
Oh, you remember my name? Go to hell.
By the way, talking about, kids. The other day, we were supposed to watch The Flash.
Yeah.
I told my daughter, because it's on at 8 o'clock and she goes to bed at 7:30, I told her that I was going to tape The Flash.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She's like, I don't. What do you mean you're going to tape?
Yeah.
And then I hear my son, who's 7, in the other room go, how can you tape a TV show?
Wow.
How can you put tape on a TV show?
Or you'll see it all the time, Case, where at events, people have their iPhones, and you can tell how old somebody is. Let me film you.
No. Let me film you. Yeah, no, I know. It's all changed. But what do you say? Well, here, let me get you in binary code. Hang on. Let's get some zeros and ones on this. Let's get some zeros and ones all up in this. Right, let's make a bunch of zeros and ones that go in a circle. You want to?
Have their heads explode.
Yeah.
Now, the vinyl's making such a comeback that I think they reinstituted a chart for sales.
Really?
Vinyl sales, yeah.
I find that I think I love going to a record store. I don't really have any records anymore, but I love the vibe of it. Yeah. But it's also a platform. My guess is you don't suffer the overly trendy too well, correct?
No, I mean, look, if I had, it's an expensive habit to have, and it's also like, I don't know when that point in the day comes when I'm going to drop the needle.
Right,
you know what I mean? As opposed to like just throwing, and I play music, and so you'd think I'd be like that, but I'm like, it just is, it's an extravagance, and I guess I would do it if I had no job, right, or nothing to do, but I'd rather, you know what I mean? I don't mind, I'm not such an audiophile that I can't enjoy it. I sometimes just hold my iPhone to my head. Like, I'm not a genius, but that's like AM radio that I grew up with, so it's fine with me.
Yeah. Being in the music business as long as you have, do you have any well-known music buddies? You got any people that
I
have
do.
Been,
I have a couple
successful?
Of, I have a couple of pretty successful friends. I'm pretty friendly with Dave Grohl.
Oh, nice.
We have kids in the same school, and he's very lovely, and he has worn, for a while I had a little t-shirt company in my garage that made t-shirts for all my various ventures, so he's worn Reigning Monarchs, which is my other band, he's worn Reigning Monarchs t-shirts, he wore one from my podcast on the last Letterman.
Oh, you gotta get a King sweater shirt on.
I'm gonna get him a King, I'll get him one, he'll wear it, he does it, he's very, very sweet.
He seems really
very, very sweet.
And
Tom Morello, another nice guy, very, very sweet, super funny.
Well,
a lot less serious in person than you would think he'd be.
His introduction into the Hall of Fame for Kiss was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. He sits on the board.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. So we have fights all the time because I'm like, you're not, no ska bands? And he's like, don't even look at me like that. I'm like, really? Not even the Specials? No, not at all.
Fishbone?
Yeah. Fishbone.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Who besides the ska bands, who's in a, where's a glaring example? Who is
Link Wray.
Okay.
Link Wray invented distortion. Link Wray invented the guitar that everybody plays. Link Wray is such a giant omission that it makes me furious.
Okay.
I can't even be funny about it. If you don't know who he is, he wrote the song Rumble, which you've heard in a million movies.
Yeah.
And Jack the Ripper and Comanche. And he put a pencil in a speaker cone and invented distortion. And he's not even close to being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's Rumble's a great song, man. Great song. And you hear it and you're like, wait, I know that tune. Who is it?
Yeah.
I got to hear it.
He's incredible. Marissa, he's incredible.
Is he on Pulp Fiction soundtrack?
On the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. Yeah. It was in the movie Breathless. Like, he's everyone's covered it.
Yeah, when he walks into Jackrabbit Slims, I think that's the song that's playing.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You nailed that. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's a great tune. And he's just like, you know, he was pre-surf band, and it wasn't surf music. It was instrumental. It was much heavier than Duane Eddy, who I'm sure is in. And
you ever get to meet him?
No, I never met him. He was a nut job.
Oh, yeah?
Absolutely insane. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, yeah. He died a couple years ago.
Do you know, the story, who are we hearing? Dick Dale has obviously a legendary sound as well, but we hear he is actually a dick, you know, like he is... He's actually an insufferable prick.
Yeah. He's got some. He thinks he invented a lot of things.
Right.
He like, I invented Playgirl magazine. Like, he'll just make stuff up. You know, I invented the bending arm for the microphone. I invented this whole area here. I invented pretty women. Did you know that? Gorgeous women. Invented I invented Angela. Them. Look at them. This is all my stuff. This is all my stuff I've done. I'm insane. I have a ponytail. How are you? But he's a great guitar player. Really great guitar player.
Nice. You know? Aside from the he's just not that into you, what are some of the other titles of the books that you've
read? It's called The Breakup Because It's Broken, which has a chapter for men called Dude, Get Off Her Lawn. we had a dating book that came out last year called It's Just an Effing Date, which we did a thing for. And then we have the, you know, How to Keep Your Marriage from Sucking is currently being written.
That's an interesting one because I dispense advice as well because my wife and I have done, you know, therapy that actually paid off. And it just brought it down to one simple thing, how to communicate. There are simple people. All the sexes are the same. They're not. We hear things differently. And it's just the truth of it. What's the biggest mistake a guy, because we have a lot of guys who do singles mixers and guys are woefully unequipped to approach women. What's the biggest mistake guys make who are currently on the dating scene?
I mean, it always comes down to just not being yourself, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And also, I think we have a phrase that we use called don't freak people out with your need.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a game to be played and it's called don't be needy. You know, so walk up to a woman, give her a compliment, and leave. Just leave, bro. Say something nice, take your drinks, walk off. If she looks at you, then it landed.
Right.
But if you bring nothing to it but just service, if you're just like, I just want to say, like, you're beautiful and I don't want to bug you, I'm getting a beer, but I felt incumbent on me to mention it. You know what I mean? If she's interested, that's a solid thing, and then you leave and then the girl goes.
Angela over here is frantically nodding. You agree with that?
Yes, guys, stop lingering.
Don't linger.
Don't linger.
Yeah, the linger's a bummer. Dude, you're just hanging on the outside. Have a plan. Anybody in life with a plan that has to go somewhere but can't stay the whole time, that's always hot. That's, you know, and that's what happens when you have a job.
You agree, Angela?
Yeah.
Angela, so if a guy comes up and says, I just want to say you're gloriously beautiful.
I say thank you so much.
Oh, I got a good one.
And then walk away.
How about you leave, what are there, 10 digits in a phone number? You leave them 9 digits. Say, listen, if you want to come get the last digit, I'll be over here.
I will throw the piece of paper away. Bye.
That's hokey. That's hokey, right?
Well, also because you're giving them your number, you should ask. Or walk up and go, look, if you're not seeing anybody, I'd love to take you out. Simple. Just clean. Just super clean. But you don't have to be anything.
I want to clarify Angela over here, because if you come over and you say, hi, I just want to come over and say you're beautiful and you walk away, that doesn't mean that you're going to land her. That means you've given her the option. You have now put the ball in her court.
That's right.
She's interested. And you know what? That way it alleviates a waste of time for everybody, I think.
I can't tell you how many women will say men never come up and just say something. Men don't come up and say something to us. You know what I mean? They don't approach women enough or in the right way. A lot of dudes just like to get drunk, stand next to you, and hope it works out.
Yeah, I see that all the time,
dude.
That's how they do it in Australia.
It happened recently during Camp Out for Hunger. We were hanging out at Xfinity Live afterwards, and it was just a group of people, and there was a really nice guy, but he had no plan, Greg. And the have a plan approach works really well, and he just lingered. And after a while, it got a little uncomfortable for everybody involved, you know? And especially the girls.
Right. And it also, like, you've now ruined the moment that you may have already had. Like, you don't know what you've done, but if you go up and look, the girl will let you know if she wants you to stay.
Right.
She'll re-engage you in conversation or say something nice to you. Right.
Brilliant and so true, because you now, you give her ownership of the moment, and she can make the decision. And in that,
you end up looking much better than you would if you stand there and verify that you're nothing worth talking to.
Right. And a lot of people will say, I always get when this conversation comes up, like, well, what if I'm shy or whatever? I'm like, you know what? I feel for you if you have anxiety. I genuinely do. And I think if you have that kind of anxiety, you should probably get some help for it.
Yeah.
But life is over quick, bro.
Yeah.
And that moment is gone. And you may never see that person. And why not? I
mean,
there was, to me, there was something exciting about the idea that I could easily be rejected.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like when I go up and do stand-up. Like, most of the time it goes very well, but it could go poorly any time.
Right.
There's no guarantees. And that's sort of a thrill. And if you can get over the hump of, like, worrying about what's going to happen, you might enjoy doing it, you know?
True,
and plus, you got to practice.
Do you know,
am I wrong?
No, Kathy, certainly. Yeah.
No, not at all. I think that's exactly correct.
Yeah.
The thing is, Kathy's perpetually horny, so stop she it. Would just say, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. That.
She has to change her underpants, seven times a day.
It was disgusting.
You know what? When I was 23, I didn't know this, and maybe you can speak to somebody who is that age, but actually having some idea as to where you might want to take a career or have a job. Like, I was just bouncing around. I had no direction whatsoever, and I was really interested in this girl, and we liked each other. We had a really nice time together, but it turned her off and ultimately ended the relationship because I had no plan whatsoever when it came to having a job or a career path or anything like that. And she's the one who told me, and it was a nice mutual exchange, and we never hooked up again afterwards, but it was good advice to get as to come up with an idea, come up with a plan.
I think part of the reason is that when someone doesn't have anything to do, you're their thing. They get the sense that they're the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
And they can't take that pressure. No one can take the pressure of you only wanting them. You know what I mean? Like, get a job, dude. Like, have something. Find something. Even if it's not a job. Yeah. Even if it's like, I like you, but I have to play softball. Weird. But whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, just so that you have a place to go to, a place that has, you know, because people are interested in people who have other interests. That's
right.
That's why a relationship can be fun. Like, my wife had a job at a record company.
Yeah.
So she had zero time for me, which I found very hot. Like, just no time. Like, flying to Las Vegas to see Beck. And I was like, so no, I'm not going with you. No, okay. But I found that very exciting because she lived a life that was, you know, on fire.
So she's your creative partner as well. You guys, you do a lot of stuff together. Does that create issues when you're exposed to each other that much?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I've gotten on meds. I wish I was joking. I'm very, you know, when you do stand-up, you like a reaction. So if I write something and then she just stares at it, before she can even say she doesn't like it, I'm like, whatever. And then then the whole day's wrecked.
And then you go.
My wife's a thinker. My wife's quiet. She's a thinker. She'll look at something for a really long time and then later on tell you she thinks it's funny, but she'll just stare at it for a long time.
Do you know my wife gets all the time, and it's the thing, Steve's so funny. You must laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. And so I told her response should be, until he starts hitting. And that's
my wife would say, if laughing is crying, that's what happens a lot. And I do it mostly alone in my car, thinking of all the other choices I could have made. She could have married anyone in Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
Well, I'm psyched for the marriage book. When will that come out, do you think?
That'll come out. It's supposed to come out, the first part of it. So now now they do books where you can write like a short, super small book, so it's going to come out in five different installments. And
is the ebook thing, is that that revolutionized the industry?
Well, it's wrecked the it's ruined the industry in a way. But on the other hand, you don't have to write 500,000 words. Like, you can write half as much, and people will buy it. But then if you say to them, look, the first two chapters are this, or the first book is this, the second book is that, you know.
It's sort of taken the concept, what iTunes did is with music.
Right.
You don't have to buy the whole album. You buy separate little things. But, I mean, obviously, in this case, you can serialize a book.
Right. And also, people will pay $250 for a smaller book. Quite honestly, a lot of books should be smaller. Our relationship book should never be more than 174 pages.
Right.
If so, we're just lying. Last just 40 bad. Pages are just lies.
the hidden secret of the help book section.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're getting a lot of people who are just tuning in wondering who we're talking to. It's Greg Barron. And then how about your band? What's going on? I mean, or the King Sweater? Is it
the King Sweater is going to start doing shows? And it's the thing I'm doing right now is I'm telling that story while playing music at the same time. So it's sort of like a punk rock cabaret thing. And I'm doing it as a one man show in Australia. I go to Australia every year, so I'm going down there for 9 weeks.
Nice.
In March, but I do. Out and getting it going. There it is.
Yeah, this is Rumble.
I love it.
Case, you know the song.
Yeah.
That's Link Ray. That's a great tune. And actually, it was when she comes back from the bathroom, I think, is the scene. In,
yeah. Yes. And if you want to see something Jack amazing, you can YouTube, but it's from the movie. It might get loud, but Jimmy Page listens to this and turns it up and air guitars to it and brings him so much joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, go and see Greg. And I tell you what, we'll put a link to your Twitter page and, anything else you want. And your MySpace.
MySpace page, my LinkedIn stuff is up there.
What's your AOL account?
Yeah. Just put a link to my Uber account. I don't even know how that works. But I have a profile over there.
We'll put that on PrestonandSteve.com. And Angela, thank you for coming in, too.
It's
good to
see
you.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Greg, enjoy your time in Philadelphia,
Thanks, guys. It was awesome.
All right, Greg Baird, everybody, the Kings. Sweater.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.